Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Online, worldofwrestling.com presents your number one action and comedy radio show based around the world of professional wrestling. OWW Radio.
The King of Kings goes back on his throne.
The champ is here.
Be the man!
You gotta be the man!
Whoa! It looks like there's a new sheriff in town!
And man, is it about time!
And this is not a mirage! This is real! This is here! This is now! This is the second coming!
Now your host, Alan. What's his name?
Wojcicki? Wojcicki?
Your house started to shake, the heavens opened up, and God himself spoke to you and said this.
Wojcicki, is it?
It's Wojcik. Alan Wojcik. Do I really need to write this out for you? God!
Now, your host, Alan Wojcik.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to All American Night. Oh, it's awesome to be a U.S. citizen, basking in the greatness of the late James Brown. Ivan Drago got nothing on that. The way to join us on the show, 877-588-9877, option 1. Or if you use the Skype like we do, and Sir Rockin' does, you can get us that way. Tonight's guest is actually, due to some legaling through the governor's office of Arizona, we had to pre-tape this interview because they had to listen to every single question we asked. Our guest, he is a star in Lucha Libre USA Masked Warriors. He is R.J. Brewer, and as we said, he is the son of the governor of Arizona, so due to legalities, this interview was pre-taped. Myself and the Spud guy from Russ Talk Radio joined us for a very interesting evening. It'll be on during the 10 o'clock hour. We were supposed to be joined by a promoter from a group called Wrecking Ball Wrestling, which is based out of the Dallas, Texas area. To reminisce on passing of, well, not one, we'll reminisce right now first on the first passing this past weekend, since our last endeavor here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. We are about the new school, but we're also about the old school, and we found out one of our recent guests, Jimmy Rave, former ROH and TNA wrestling star, went to the Shellman's funeral yesterday, and it would be longtime Southeastern pro wrestler Nightmare Ted Allen, who was found dead in his home by his girlfriend and a wrestler named Kyle Matthews. He passed away at the age of 54. And the funny part is that Allen and Matthews were actually scheduled to wrestle for Great Championship Wrestling in Phenix City, Alabama. He had been Matthews' mentor and travel partner for some time. Allen had wrestled throughout the Southeast for near 35 years and didn't really make it to a big, huge name level, but if you lived in the Southeast, even I've heard of Nightmare Ted Allen. So we want to send our best wishes to him and his family. His funeral was yesterday. And this one really saddens me because, and everybody's going to go, yeah, right, you're pulling our strings. We're really in mourning over the passing of Jim Weber. Now, to the average fan, you have no idea who I'm talking about. If you were a fan of World Class Championship Wrestling through the 80s, you knew him as General Skandar Akbar. He wrestled actively from the late 60s. Actually started in 63 wrestling as Jimmy Weber for many promotions, including Bill Watts' Mid-South, worked for UWF, and, of course, was around in the heyday of WCCW. He actually had his name changed by Fritz Von Erich, the legendary Jack Atkinson of the Von Erich family, who ran World Class in the Dallas territory for decades and were outlined on not one but two DVDs. The name was actually changed by Fritz Von Erich in order to sound more Arabic, and the general actually stopped wrestling in 77 and became one of the most villainous, hated managers in the Texas promotions and World Class. And his stable was called Devastation Incorporated, and it had a whole menagerie of people. And funny enough, he was a part of Wrecking Ball Wrestling, which is a company that is an upstart in the Texas area. And as I said, we got an email at Online World of Wrestling through our big boss, Brad Dykens, and kind of said to me, you may want to get involved in this. What's going on? Says, there's a promotion out of Texas that sent me a note about possibly getting Maniac Matt Bourne, who you know is the clown during the 90s in WWF, WWE, and says, also working for them is General Skandar Akbar. I was like, get the hell out of here. And General Akbar had been managing throughout the Mid-South area, and then Texas, Oklahoma, even to this day. And, sorry, this is just choking me up a little bit, because as I said, this is sad to hear. You can actually go to the promotion's website, is wreckingballwrestling.com, all one word, no spaces, and you can also follow them on Twitter. We were supposed to be joined by Wrecking Ball Wrestling's Tony Martin, but however, I'm guessing due to today being the funeral for General Akbar, Mr. Weber, we're really saddened because the last time we had talked with Mr. Martin and Wrecking Ball Wrestling, we actually had a verbal or email commitment to having General Akbar on this show, and apparently was very excited to come on and talk with someone like myself who appreciated the art of the heel manager, as Spug and I, Mace and I, have outlined on this show many a time. And it's very disheartening to have been so close to having one of the greatest managers of the 70s and 80s on your show, and to find out that, yes, we knew he was ill, but, so, yeah, not the way I wanted to open tonight's show. I was really hoping to open in a different light, but, as they say, that's the wrestling business, and sometimes it's bad, and sometimes it's not. So, you can actually, you can still check him out. He was a part of the WWE's version of a World Class Championship Wrestling DVD. Very well done piece. So yeah, that's our that was supposed to be part of our shows in the next couple of weeks. It was going to be my own little birthday present to myself. Because next Tuesday night is going to be the day before my 36th birthday. Yeah, I turned 36, so that would have been a lot of fun. And as I said, I'm sad and sorry if it sounds like I don't want to be here, but I do want to be here. Just really wished that General Akbar was going to be here because it would have been a lot of fun to have had him. So we'll move on. So we were expecting to have Mr. Martin on with us, but as mentioned, today was the funeral, I believe, in the Texas territory, Dallas, Texas area. And I'll try to move on as best as I can. Both Spug and Mace may be joining us later on tonight. We may also be joined by Tim Stein. We may be joined by Cindy Sin. Not really sure. To lighten things up a little bit, we found out that there's a birthday in the house, and it's not me, and it's not, I don't know if he listens to this show, but the man with the biggest testicular fortitude in wrestling celebrates the birthday today, and that would be the one and only Vincent Kennedy McMahon, who I believe is 64, 65? I can't remember. I typed it out somewhere, and I don't know where the heck it went. I think my daughter deleted it. So, amazing to look at that guy, and you just go, he's how old? He's like, get the heck out of here. He's that old? Oh, The Rock says he's 65. And it looks like we got someone on the line. Would that be
I'm in your interwebs, invading your podcast.
Oh, dear God. There's the Spug guy. You got anything you want to say about Vinnie Mac turning 65 today, man?
Happy birthday, Vinnie Mac. And in all honesty, you old fart, thank you for bringing us wrestling as we know it today. Because while you may have stepped on the shoulders of giants to get where you are, it is without your vision that wrestling, you know, would have reached the heights that it has.
Well, it's pretty amazing for a guy whose dad didn't even want him in the wrestling business. I've seen the McMahon DVD that WWE put out and other programming on him, and to realize he actually... I'm sure, I don't know if the Wikipedia page was right, that he didn't meet his dad until he was 12 years old. But he can be all braggadocious, I'm Vince McMahon. He's a kid from the Carolinas, which I find so funny, because he wanted to destroy all the Carolina wrestling, and instead you're like, you're from there. You should have liked that wrestling, man.
Well, Vincent McMahon Sr., I do believe, is his stepdad. That's not his real dad.
I always thought it was his dad, and I think...
No, I believe that's his stepfather, and Vincent McMahon Sr.
I could be wrong.
Yeah, I believe that's his stepfather, and Vincent McMahon Sr. wanted Junior to go to school to be a lawyer originally. And
yeah, he's a private school brat.
Yeah, he wanted him to go to school to be a lawyer, and Junior refused and did all kinds of stuff and got himself into the business, and it was probably a smart decision because look where he's at today. I mean, his wife's about to become a senator. He runs a multi-billion dollar company. You know, his son took over a multi-billion dollar wing of a company in China. His daughter works under him. His son-in-law is one of the top talents in his company. He got, you know, four gorgeous grandchildren. I've seen the pictures of all of them.
Yeah, he can't help but trot them out on TV. It's like enough. You don't need to see the grandkids yet, Vince.
You know, as much as we pick on the guy, as much as we bag on Vince, he really is, as much harm as he brought to the wrestling industry at times, he did bring a whole heck of a lot of good, too.
Oh, of course. I mean, the guy made the biggest gamble of his life doing WrestleMania back in the day.
Well, you got to remember that Crockett's paid for WrestleMania 1.
Oh, yeah. If you watch the Rise and Fall WCW, they'll tell you all about it.
They bought the TV rights back for, what, $5 million?
Something along those lines. According to his Wikipedia page, Vince Sr. is the birth father of Vince McMahon Jr.
I thought Sr. was his stepfather. I always thought it was his stepfather. I never thought, because I remember reading a book about McMahon, a biography, in which he talked about Vince McMahon Sr. and that it was his stepfather, and his mom had begun dating him because Vince's real father was very abusive.
Yeah, he had actually had a string of stepdads. Actually, at one point, had a stepdad's last name as his last name. So we can pull that up real quick here. Yeah, he was born in Pinehurst, North Carolina, and his dad left the family when he was still a baby. And he, this blows my mind. Him and Linda have been married since 1966.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. I'm 35. Mm-hmm. He's been married longer than I've been alive. That's absolutely phenomenal. And that's a great testament to them.
That's almost 40 years in marriage.
Yeah, especially with all the rumors that he's had about him over the years.
You know, and I don't know anything more than the average fan, but just using a tad bit of common sense, something tells me if you're Linda McMahon, you let a few indiscretions slide. If you know how many zeros are attached to the end of that man's bank account.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm totally
sure
on that one. Oh, yeah.
You let a few things slide that a normal housewife wouldn't. And I'm not implying that Linda McMahon is a gold digger. I'm not implying that she is after the money at all. All I'm saying is that when you know there's wealth involved and you know that, you know, I can raise a fit over this, or I could be set for life and my children could be set for life, maternal instinct kind of kicks in and you just let a few things slide. But again, hats off to Vince. Happy birthday to him. I hope you have another wonderful 65 years on this planet. You live that long, or you get your head.
You never know. I mean, the guy is the genetic jackhammer, as he's called himself, and it's amazing just to look at the body of work the man's created. And granted, yes, he is the creative mind of it. Over the years, he's had some great help from Pat Patterson when he took over the company in the 80s. His dad, the funniest part of that whole thing, was he bought the company, and when he bought the company, he had to buy it not only from his father, but he had his father's company, Capital Wrestling, was actually owned by Vince Sr., was owned by Arnold Skolin, the Golden Boy, was at one point manager of WWW, did I get all three W's? F. Champion Bob Backlund was a great wrestler in his own right. But also another guy named Bob Morella, who you and I grew up knowing as the one and only Gorilla Monsoon. And the deal was
really?
That Vince, yeah.
So Monsoon was an owner?
Yep. They had a piece of the territory. They had a piece of Capital Wrestling, which was all the Northeast to, I think, the Washington, D.C. area. If you're ever roaming online, go to kayfabecommentaries.com, and Kayfabe Memories is also a good message board. Go to kayfabecommentaries.com and get a copy of the history of WWF. There's a 2-year series in one disc with Superstar Billy Graham, and he covers with Sean Oliver, 1977 to 1978, and Vince Sr. ran out of, I think it was a hotel room or a hotel building in D.C. and also had an office in New York. And it was just, I was like, you got to be kidding me. That's amazing.
Now, if I remember right, part of the agreement when Junior bought the company from his dad was that Junior wasn't allowed to buy out certain territories.
Man, and we all know what happened there, don't we, kids?
And I remember a quote from Vince McMahon. I think it was on, I forget what DVD that was on, to be quite honest. But he was, it was on the ESPN E60 special when they were at WrestleMania 24.
The one in, you mean the one in here that was in Florida, or 24, which was, I thought he did it on the 25th one.
I can't, it might have been 25, I can't remember. But the E60 special, because there's an extended version of that. That interview is actually about 20, 25 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the whole thing on the internet, like on ESPN.com.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if they still have it up, but at one point when it first came out, you could watch the entire interview, the extended part of it, the full thing. And he's going back a little bit through the history of WWF and talking about, the creation of WrestleMania, and he's talking about the deal he made with his dad to not buy out friends of his dad, which he kind of really didn't do. He just made it so that they, had a hard time doing business. It's still slightly underhanded, but he had made the quote that, looking back on it now, if my father were around and knew what I had planned to do with his business when he sold it to me, he probably wouldn't have sold it to me. We wouldn't have what we have today.
Oh, of course. And that was the territorial days, especially for fans that aren't aware of it. WWE actually isn't that really that old. WWE used to be WW, the Worldwide Wrestling Federation, and actually came because Vince McMahon Sr. was a part of the NWA, and we could do another hour just on the history of the whole promotion, but the bottom line for everybody, Vince Sr. split from the NWA due to issues with the champion. Because back in the 60s, 70s, even up until the Ric Flair era of the 80s, there was a 9-person committee that voted on who got the heavyweight championship belt of the NWA and became the traveling champion. And there's a phenomenal book, I think the gentleman's name is Tim Hornbaker. I may be wrong on his name, but there's a book that's the definitive history of the NWA that Vince Sr. basically told them where to go stick it. He left and made Nature Boy Buddy Rogers his initial champion, and then Nature Boy Buddy Rogers helped launch Bruno Sammartino into an 8-year championship reign.
Nature Boy Buddy Rogers is never listed as the actual original champion of the WWWF, the Worldwide Wrestling Federation, on their history. It's always Bruno Sammartino.
Yeah, because he laid down for Bruno, I think, like 49 seconds. I think his health wasn't exactly the greatest, if I remember. But I'm a native New Yorker, so my grandfather told me great stories, and my stepmother's grandfather also told me some great stories of the wrestling of New York in the 60s and being at the original Madison Square Garden, I think version 3 at the time, before where they got to now in 31st, 33rd Street in that area, Midtown. And they can remember going to Sunnyside Gardens and Queens and all these places.
Speaking
that now you can't even light a cigarette up in, and now, they were sitting there smoking away and everybody went formally dressed. And you're going to say about the former, the legend who should not only be in the WWE Hall of Fame, the guy should have his own wing.
I think Bruno is in.
He's not in it and probably never will be. He has utter distaste for the current WWE product. Any interview that you ever find him do, He despises it. He's more a fan, from what I've read and seen. Scott Hudson was one of the people that interviewed him a couple years ago, and there was a wrestling convention here in the Tampa area, and he had said Bruno just he's I don't know if he's I don't think he's a bitter person. I think he's more disgusted with the changing of the guard, so to speak.
Didn't he have a falling out with Junior?
Yeah, there was a big time falling out in the 80s, especially revolving around that whole scandal that before the steroid scandal happened. And that's actually where we're going to stop for a minute or two, and we're going to reset the show. We're going to come back in a couple minutes, and we're going to discuss all the fun goings on in TNA wrestling. There's a new champ in town. Oh, wait. No, there isn't. We'll discuss that on the other side of this break. Online World of Wrestling Radio. We'll be back with Bug. I'm Alan Wojcik.
Website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene. All this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, news, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a mouse click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley.
Plus, the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling columns today. And the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Janice McDowell.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man.
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Vance, the Boogie Wickerman.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling. Online. It's the site the pros use. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Here's a quick message going to all the geeks out there. If you want to listen to three guys talk your language, tune in to Otaku Talk Live, Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. What? You expect me to be funny? We do that on the show. So tune in. Listen. I demand it.
Thursday night, the Wild Talk Radio Network becomes the place where anything goes. Prepare to be simple. Thursdays, 10:30 p.m. Eastern. On the Wild Talk Radio Network.
This is Mace with an announcement from the head of the Wild Talk Radio Network. With the goal in mind to keep ratings as high as they are with DJ Tim Stein and DJ Sir Rockin', the Wild Talk Radio Network hereby releases Maverick and Nick from the network.
Just kidding, guys. This is the Wild Talk Radio Network, where friends get together to have fun and make fun of Mav.
This is the Godfather of Extreme, Rob Parks. Tune in every Saturday, midnight-ish, for CB Radio, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
My Hulk Hogan stinks, I'm sorry. 877-588-9877, option 1 is the way to join us. Online World of Wrestling Radio back here on All American Night. And I want to rewarn everybody that when we go to the top of the hour, whenever we go to our interview with Lucha Libre USA star R.J. Brewer, due to the governor of Arizona, his mommy, we had to pre-tape this interview and have every single question screened by the governor's office. That was so much fun. The Spud Guy is joining us back. He is now on his magical headset. We appreciate him being here. And joining us after going salvaging through every computer shop in the entire continent of Australia, also from Rust Talk Radio, Mace joins us. Good evening, sir. Or good morning,
actually.
Good
evening, brother. Brother.
That's right, so sisters, brothers, cousins.
So my Hulk Hogan impression isn't much better. So
hey, Hulk Hogan's impression of Hulk Hogan isn't great these days. And I'm real appreciative that they said that Hulk Hogan wasn't getting involved in many more storylines. So, of course, during this week's Impact, stunned, absolutely stunned to see him smack dab involved in the storyline that's involving Kevin Nash, Sting, and Jeff Jarrett. For those that didn't watch it, they were going on. It's basically them all going on about, you know, why are we taking a backseat to the younger generation? And the younger generation basically told them to go Kiss It, which was basically Ric Flair's Fortune faction. The lights went down, the lights came back up, and everybody was taking a dirt nap as the Fortune guys beat on them.
What's that I smell on? Does it?
I don't know.
That smells like a rehash of a WCW storyline. Millionaires
not
club
once so
blood.
Ever.
No, not at all.
Not at all. Not at all. We don't rehash. The wrestling business doesn't do that. The biggest shock of shocks, and this is the thing that I'm glad I didn't have a microphone in front of me on Thursday night, and we would have liked to have discussed this last Tuesday, but since we're spoiler free, we couldn't. That there's a new world champion in TNA wrestling. He'll be determined at Bound for Glory in Daytona because Rob Van, Rob Van Dam's no longer the world champ because, according to Eric Bischoff, he apparently got 117 stab wounds or stitches from the attack by the Monster Abyss and his lady friend Janice. Let me get this out real quick, because this just really, really, a lot of the company wasn't really happy about this going on. And there's been a lot of decisiveness within the TNA locker room between talent and who have been there for years and those new to the roster. One exception is Ric Flair, who has been described as getting along with just about everyone on both sides. Hulk Hogan is not overly disliked, but many feel that they brought him with high hopes and hasn't improved his business and isn't apparently very dedicated. Many of the talent, and this is coming from numerous sources, including some that I have that I don't reveal as journalists, since I'm a journalist and some people aren't who have radio shows. Many of the talent who have been with TNA since day one and the last 3 or 4 years were not fans of bringing in the EV 2.0 talent and putting a lot of focus on them. One member of the roster new to the company, Rob Van Dam, who has actually been very outspoken about the difference he feels he has made along with Jeff Hardy, made these comments, and this came from the Lee Wrestling Observer or the Torch, and I'm sorry if I got it wrong. This is a direct quote from Rob. I imagine a lot of the old TNA guys are feeling like they're taking a back seat. The thing is, you can't argue with numbers. Last week, TNA broke all-time records for ratings. Okay. TNA needed a change. Six-sided ring and the great technical wrestlers that nobody knew wasn't working. TNA brought in two rock stars. And look at the company now. Dixie Offen's points about hiring Jeff Hardy and RVD started an old new era. Well, she didn't hire him. She brought him back. WWE didn't want him. Why do some of the wrestlers not see it? Too young, too green, too selfish to have the correct perspective. Wow. Whereas some of the TNA stars are lucky to get recognized walking around the studios. Jeff and myself live like actual celebrities, signing autographs and taking pictures everywhere we go. Without experiencing this, it's probably hard to imagine. In fact, very few wrestlers stick out in people's minds the way that Jeff and I do. Wonder why. We love our fans and we love their love. TNA is blowing up. Good things will come our way, and I see it all happening now. This is very exciting. More people watching TNA means more exposure, and he goes on and on. Unfortunately, Rob's on one of these deals, guys, and folks in our chat room, which is available through wildtalkradio.com. He's on one of these deals like Mick Foley is, and I think Ric Flair is, that he's got so many appearances through the contract he has to have. And then he has to disappear for a while. That's why Mick Foley disappeared over the summer. The thing that's been getting me really irritated, and then I'll open the floor to Mason and Spug, is if you knew Rob Van Dam was running out of dates, and he is the world champion, and his contract with TNA called for him to make more money per match if they went over his original date limit of dates, why not just have him do the time-honored tradition and, oh yeah, lay down in the ring and get beat for the belt instead of coming up with this storyline, which basically, I mean, we talked about it for a week. We actually talked about it last week here on the show with Kurt Angle being a part of this top 10 that Dixie Carter, the fans have voted on, Hulk Hogan, Eric Bischoff were controlling. That just all went out the window completely. Because now you've had, I think it was an 8-man tournament that started this past week, and at the next pay-per-view, September 5th, No Surrender, you'll see the semifinals of that with Kurt Angle taking on Jeff Hardy and the Pope D'Angelo De Niro taking on Mr. That guy, Anderson. First to Mace, then to Spug. We'll let Spug get a couple drags of his cigarette in because he's had a rough day at the office. To Mace, does this bother you that Rob Van Dam didn't want to put the belt down and actually lose it back to someone like AJ Styles or lose it to Abyss or even have lost it at the ECW pay-per-view?
It doesn't really bother me per se, as I think he's trying to do what he believes is best for the company. However, I will put more faults on TNA for signing people to these limited date contracts and then using them up in the first couple of months. You know, if you're going to sign these guys to a contract, sign them to a proper contract. You know, sign them to a 1 year, sign them to a 2 year, hell, even sign them to a 6 month contract, not this, oh, you work this many dates and, oh crap, we used them up. Now we're stuck.
You're a fan of the business, obviously, Spug, and you're a fan of the ECW product from back in the day. We'll address the EV 2.0 storyline in a minute, but you're the book. You're the book. You're Vince Russo. You're Scott Conway, I think is the gentleman's name that also writes to them. You're Bischoff. You're Hogan. You're The Office. Jeff Jarrett's involved, and they come to you and go, okay, we got a problem. RVD's out of dates. He's got to disappear for a while. Do you do what they're doing right now, where you do an injury angle to take them off TV, or do you have them do, as I mentioned, the honored tradition of actually losing the belt in the ring?
You do what's right for the business, and you drop the belt in the ring. You don't pull a Brett. You don't pull, you know, who the hundreds of people have done it before him. You don't do that. Especially when the guy who trained you is the original Sheik. You know,
you would like to see him drop it to Sabu or Abyss at some point? Maybe even on that whole effing show, I was very surprised that that wasn't a title match. Or if it was, I was sitting there going, wow, he didn't lose.
He could have dropped it to whomever he wanted to be quite honest. He could have dropped it to AJ. He could have dropped it to Kurt. He could have dropped it to Sabu. It didn't matter. It didn't matter who he dropped it to. He could have dropped it to any one of them. And it would have been the right thing to do. And I will agree with Mace that you need to get rid of this booking BS where we only book by dates and we don't book by, you know, actual contracts, because quite frankly, the indies book by dates. You know, you don't do that when you're a professional company and have, you know, I don't want to say millions of dollars, but you get the point.
Well, this is the same guy who had said in interviews after he had gotten the championship that he would only work with guys that had been on TV during the WCW run of everything. So it was kind of like maybe it was a traditionalist in me. I'm a very creative person. This just doesn't seem like it's creative. This kind of, I get it to a degree. You're doing this whole thing with Abyss and Jay, who still haven't shown up, even though everybody thought it was going to be the EV 2.0 guys. This past week also on the show, we had, Fortune basically be involved, having her own little moment in the ring, and then Dixie comes out, Miss Carter, and says, okay, by the way, Rick, see all these guys? Yeah, they're signed, so welcome to EV 2.0 versus Fortune. And once again, like I said, they're doing this on camera. We talked about this before, because, you know, so only the bad guys are upset that the EV 2.0 guys are here. None of the good guys are sitting in the locker room going, great, my spot's being taken by Tommy Dreamer. I'm so excited. I'm going to go to the bar. We also had a couple interesting releases. One that really doesn't matter to a lot of people, because she only appeared on TV a couple times, and that would be Mary-Kate Dunnigan, who you and I know on TNA Wrestling is Rosie Lots of Love, or Lot of Love, whatever she was called. Apparently, on her Twitter, she was future endeavored. And you played that great commercial with about Maverick. And is there a possibility I could get that Hallelujah thing played after I announced that one of my favorite wrestlers got his future endeavor, and that would be the Notorious 187. Homicide is free of TNA Wrestling's tyranny. Yes. Thank you. Yes, the Notorious 187 Homicide was let go. He has honestly said through his Facebook, his Twitter, and all the other things that I'm not cool enough to have, that obviously he wasn't a happy camper there, and I'm a fan of Homicide's going all the way back to his ROH days, and got to meet him at the 2004 Jeff Peterson Memorial Cup and became friends with him and an acquaintance and a big fan of his. And I never understood this to either Mae. Look, I was a big fan of the LAX tag team because even without Conan being there and then Ariel or whatever the heck they were calling her, and didn't need that. You had some awesome matches with the tag team. Homicide's a great worker. Sean Hot Stuff Hernandez, as he was known in ROH, and other promotions, great worker. So there's plenty of rumors going around about where he's going to next. Heard something about a pay-per-view in New York. I can't confirm it. Spug is stepping away for a couple minutes, so right now it's just going to be me and Mace. Good move, bad move? Do you think in his entire career in TNA wrestling, Homicide was ever used properly? Were you a fan of the LAX tag team, or did you think once they separated that tag team, he was doomed?
I was a fan of the LAX tag team, however, I haven't really been a fan of Homicide on his own. I did watch a lot of his stuff in Ring of Honor, and to be honest, I didn't really think much of it. But if you're not going to use somebody at all to the point they did with Homicide, then there's no point in keeping him around. Pure and simple. If you can't use the guy, then so be it. You know, give him his walking papers, let him go make money on the indies.
Now, the funniest part is, while these people were being released, a couple people were signed. A Northeast gentleman by the name of Rob Echoes is apparently now also under contract. Indie star Becky Bayless is involved. They're both going to be appearing in the future in a quote-unquote Jersey Shore-style gimmick. You go in our forum at OWW Genesis through OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. You can see photos of them. And everybody's been going, you know, what's been going on with some of this talent that's out there? I mean, you know, like, the world's greatest tag team sitting out there and Hurricane Helms sitting out there. Well, one of those people had, we can talk about this because it won't appear on TV. Former WWE diva Katie Lee Burchill worked a dark match prior to the Impact tapings last night in Universal Studios. She was working under the name Kat LaRue, and she wrestled Madison Rayne, former Knockouts champion, and lost to her. And yeah, her 90 days is up, and I don't know, would it be more interesting to the fans if she was the mystery biker as opposed to who we all think it is, being the former Victoria, Tara, whatever she's called, Mace? Or do you not even care? Do you just like, I don't care about this motorcycle thing, just take her helmet and throw it into the Wizarding World of Harry Potter in the other park?
I just wish they'd hurry up with this biker angle, get rid of it. It's not really doing any interest. Hell, I heard people booing it any time it's been done in the Impact Zone recently. As for Katie Lee getting a shot, good on her, because she was not utilized at all in the WWE, and hopefully TNA, if they do give her a chance on TV, hopefully they give her a gimmick and just let her work properly, because from what I've been told, the girl can work. And that's one thing I love in wrestling, is seeing female workers that can actually do a match and do proper actual wrestling in a ring. Yeah, I want TNA to get that women's division back up to what it used to be. I don't want to see, you know, Divas Light out there, goddammit.
Many people, including us here, were really hoping that there would be someone, a savior, a man from the Northeast, wears Yankee hats, was going to come save us. Well, that may change, because after months of speculation about him possibly working in TNA, it now appears that our man, Paul Heyman, may be taking another route into the world of MMA. This came from numerous MMA sites that, according to Scott Coker, the CEO of Strikeforce, which I believe is the UFC's chief rival, I think they're owned by the Showtime Viacom cable network, that he has been in talks with Heyman recently about doing some work together in the future. Coker is quoted as saying, "Paul and I have been talking about doing a couple things together. If it works out, we'll do it. I think it's going to happen." Now, as far as how long before anything is revealed, Coker said,
we'll have an announcement within the next couple weeks.
So sad, too bad, TNA fans. It looks like your savior, your white knight is gone.
Yeah, I can hear him slurping on Brock Lesnar's you-know-what right now.
Oh, I'm sure he's enjoying the teat that everybody enjoys after being with the next big thing. Some interesting stuff came up, thanks to our friend Eric Bischoff. Well, not our friend, because we don't have a sponsor who brings him on a show. He has a blog. He likes to spout off on it. He's got a Facebook. He's got all this cool stuff. He recently wrote about another company that we are fans of on this show, because we've had people on, including Kenny King last week. He recently called Ring of Honor a company, quote, a backyard vanity project for marks. Ow. Never to be at a loss for words, one of my favorite managers of the 80s and 90s, Mr. James E. Cornette, who does work for Ring of Honor in executive producer status and other policies and procedures, a response discussing how while Bischoff may be right about ROH not hosting talent to draw money, it's also attached to promotion that lost tens of millions more than ROH. Quote from Jim Cornette, Bischoff sees no similarity between MMA, UFC, and pro wrestling, which is why he is doomed to be a guy that was successful for 2 years out of a 20-year career. By the way, what other executive in any company actively dislikes, disagrees with, ignores, and insults 10% of people who are the most dedicated to and spend the most money on their product or service? I don't think Rasky Brown, Skullcrusher Rasky Brown, feels the same way, because he tweeted the following last night.
Just quit ROH. Good luck in future endeavors. Remember, always remain in control. Keep it real 24/7.
Apparently sources are saying that Brown was taken off all the ROH events, that he missed this weekend's ROH on HDNet tapings in Philadelphia. And it's believed that he offered to work the shows in Charlotte and Richmond this coming weekend to make up for missing the tapings, but when he got pulled, he decided to quit. With this recent booking change in the company, it's expected there are more roster changes coming up. Tyler Black, the current champ, changed his Twitter. If you're booking this pay-per-view, if you follow ROH at all, either one of you guys, Spug's back. He's scheduled as of right now at Glory by Honor 9 to take on a former guest of our show here, Roderick Strong. Would you like to see him go out ECW style, keep the belt, and then get beat by a surprise person? Or would you like to see him lay down to Roderick?
I think Spug and I would both agree that, do it traditionally. Lay down in the ring, go out flat on your back. That's the way it's meant to be done.
I think Ric Flair said it best when he said all legends go out on their back.
That's what that was, Terry Funk.
Whomever.
They all steal. They steal quotes from each other.
They've all stolen quotes from each other, and they've all said it. So, and I think it. I absolutely 100% think it's true. All legends do go out on their back. It should go out on their back. And I'm not saying that this kid's a legend by any stretch of the imagination, but if you're going to leave a territory and you have the belt, you drop it and you put it over to the new guy and you move on. End of list.
I hope so. There's rumors that have been going around that, as mentioned, Homicide's released, that he may not be looking to go home, so to speak. I'd love to see that character go to the WWE, but unfortunately, because he owns it, I can't see it going. Since you weren't here for it, you had to tend to some other stuff. Before we go to break, to you, Spug, could you see Homicide latching on
to either this Lucha Libre USA promotion that we'll talk about in a couple minutes with RJ Brewer, or could you see him go to WWE, or is he's ROH, let him stay in ROH, let him be comfortable there?
I could see him going to Lucha. I really could.
And we will discuss Lucha. As I mentioned, if you're in our chat room right now, and I'm sure you may be sitting there going, I got questions, dude. I totally got questions. You got to save them, because as we said, due to legal reasons, thanks to the governor of Arizona, we were even allowed to speak to her son. Every question that Spug and I will be giving him in this pre-recorded interview had to be pre-approved by the governor's office. So on that note, we will be back after this timeout on Online World of Wrestling Radio. RJ Brewer will be our guest in a couple moments. Let the Grand Funk Railroad take us on our journey here on All-American Night. Online World of Wrestling Radio. We'll be right back.
You know, the more things change, the more things stay the same. For as long as the internet wrestling community has been around, there have been people and internet radio shows that will bitch and complain about every little thing they see. Well, the crew over at WrestleTalk Radio are trying to change that by highlighting the positives of each and every WWE and TNA event. These wrestlers put their body on the line to entertain us each and every week. So how about we praise them, instead of bitching about the little things that get to us? So with that in mind, you should come listen to WrestleTalk Radio, Sunday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, or right after any WWE or TNA pay-per-view, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Because this is how we say thank you to those that entertain us.
Are you looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans? Then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forums. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions. As well, there are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown, which is the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forums, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
Hey everyone, this is Sir Rocket, the host of CB Radio, which you can catch every Saturday night.
Whoa, wait, Rock?
Yes, Cindy?
Did you just call yourself the host of CB Radio?
I kinda did just call me the host of CB Radio.
Honey, everyone knows that you are just the producer.
Hey, I'm not just the producer, I am the host of this.
Oh my god, shut up! Everyone knows that I am the host of CB Radio, which you can check out Saturday nights, midnight-ish, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Now, Rock.
Yes, darling.
This is where you tell everyone, I'll see you Saturday.
I'll see you Saturday.
Good boy.
This is Bam Neely from the WWE. You might like me, you might not. You better respect me. And you're listening to Wild Talk Radio.
I'm through with standing in line. The clubs I'll never get in. It's like the bottom of the ninth, and I'm never gonna win this. Life hasn't turned out quite the way I want it to be.
Tell me what you want.
I want a brand new house on an episode of Cribs, and a bathroom I can play baseball in, and a king size tub big enough for 10 plus me.
What you need?
I'll need a credit card that's got no limit, and a big black chain with a bedroom in it. Gonna join the Mile High Club at 37,000 feet.
Man.
We are back here live, online World of Wrestling Radio on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Thank you for joining us here in the second hour of our show. Spug has joined us here because we have a very special guest, thanks to the folks at Lucha Libre USA, which if you've been tuning in, like we've been telling you for weeks, on MTV2, Friday nights at 10 p.m., and also if you have friends that are Spanish-speaking and they're missing their Lucha Libre dosage from either AAA or CMLL, they can watch it on Trace, which is the MTV Musica y Mas show. That's channel. That's on Saturdays at 10 p.m. And our guest has wrestled all over the world. He has been featured in ECWA. He's wrestled throughout the Northeast. He's wrestled in Ring of Honor. But currently, believe it or not, kids, there's a lot of Mexican wrestlers in this promotion that are hated. But this guy is more hated than anyone else. He is the related... he's related to some folks in Arizona that have been making lots of news, and he's been spreading the gossip for them. Please welcome to the show RJ Brewer. Good evening, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being with us and taking out time from your very busy schedule. We know you are very busy doing your mom's work around the country. The biggest question that we got to our email address, the first one out of the gate was... involving this past week, we found out that ECWA promoter Jim Kettner has surrendered his promotional rights and his territory to some folks that I believe run Tri-State Wrestling Alliance. They were, Steve Corino a couple weeks ago was on the show with us and talked about them. As someone who worked for ECWA, for the casual fan who doesn't know anything about Jim Kettner, talk about what he meant to ECWA.
It's funny that you asked that, because I actually just heard today from a friend that Jim had retired, and I know that talking to him in the past, he's been considering this and contemplating it for the past couple of years. Actually, when I was working for him probably 3-4 years ago, he was mentioning that he didn't have much time left, and it would only be a couple more years. So doesn't surprise me to hear this. I mean, he's been, you know, clearly probably the most successful independent promoter in the country, running shows for over 40 years. And, you know, maintaining his business and his crowd. Some of his fans have been the same fans for 20, 30 years. You know, some of them maybe all the way to the first show. So clearly he had the right model to run a show, to make money, and to, you know, really keep the longevity of his promotion. So he was he's definitely somebody that a lot of independent promoters, when they're first starting off, might want to talk to and get advice.
Now, how does that promote? Because it's a Carolina-based promotion and goes up and down the Northeast. And we'll talk about other promotions that you've worked for, but what made ECWA so special? Was it Jim? Was it the fans? A combination? The wrestler? What made this company so great? Because ECWA has been is one of the longest running. The Super 8 has been one of the longest running tournaments that I know of. I knew of Cedric Strong, a Florida wrestler, in 2003. He was like, I'm going to the ECWA Super 8, and he was grinned ear to ear.
Yeah, I mean, the ECWA tournament was something that every independent wrestler, when they first started off, knew about. And then there's been a lot of tournaments since that, but I think, you know, Kettner started the mold with the, you know, the eight-man one-night tournament, and he really perfected it to the point where guys, after performing in the Super 8, end up getting jobs in, Ring of Honor or TNA and WWE. A lot of guys that Jim showcased for the very first time ended up really, you know, really getting a good push from. And I know Austin Aries, I wrestled him in the Super 8 in 2004, I believe it was, and he hadn't wrestled up in this region in the Northeast for before, I don't believe. And after that, he started with the Ring of Honor, and then he, you know, he really exploded from there. So it really was a place where people wanted to go. Jim had a connection with the WWE. I don't know if it was necessarily a working relationship, but he did have a, you know, connection with them. He did promote their local shows. So it was one of those things where, you know, getting in front of Jim Kettner and the ECWA fans was also getting you in front of, you know, higher-ups in the wrestling industry who were watching. So I think it was a place that people really wanted to go to. And, you know, he had a lot of the same fans. He ran a lot of storylines, a lot of, you know, a lot of characters on the show mixed with wrestling. So I think it was a nice combination of everything, and it was a good family show. That was, you know, a night out, and I think a lot of the fans continued to go back because they knew it was going to be entertaining.
RG, this is Spug. How you doing, man? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, buddy. Thank you.
First of all, let me say I support your mother's work. I think it's fantastic.
I think every American should.
Second of all, do you find it hard working in a promotion like Lucha Libre USA that has its roots in that specific country, and working with individuals who may not be a fan of that particular type of legislation and so forth?
No, I don't think it's so hard to work there because, you know, I have one agenda, and that's to, you know, to clean up the trash, you know, in that promotion. And I think the main problem is that people aren't listening to the truth, just like what's going on in Arizona, you know. If you look, you know, you look back, you know, you do the research that Arizona in 2009 into 2010 was the kidnapping capital of America, Phoenix was. And most of those kidnappers were from illegal Mexican drug dealers. So, you know, clearly if a law is passed that's going to help the, you know, help the citizens of Arizona, it's not a bad thing. You know, it's people calling it racist, people calling it ignorant, but what it is it's real. You know, there's real crimes that need to be cleaned up, and same thing in Lucha Libre USA. I'm not so sure some of those people should be here, so it's my goal right now and my job to try to find out who is and who isn't here properly.
fair enough. Interesting answer. Now you've also worked for ROH,
right?
And the one thing I always found interesting about ROH and something that I always applauded was the fact that they wanted to put the focus on the wrestling and not the gimmick.
Right.
And you are a former ROH Pure Wrestling champion, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, you're right. Yep.
What was it like to be given that honor and to be given that belt?
You know, it was cool, you know, because the Pure Wrestling title at the time was, you know, the major belt in that division, you know, guys who were known for their, pure wrestling and the technical ability. So, you know, it was cool. The thing that, you know, a lot of people don't know that I won it in, you know, in my hometown, and I was wrestling Doug Williams. So that was really cool. I had a lot of friends and family there. And, you know, it was a cool honor. Anytime a promoter, gets you to, you know, win a title, put you in a title match, and has a faith in you to represent the company with a title, it's a cool thing. So, you know, being able to do it in a pure wrestling style environment was even cooler.
Well, for someone like me that has never seen a pure wrestling tournament title match, and maybe some of our listeners haven't, go back in time and explain these rules, because I kind of read them and I got confused, which doesn't take much these days.
Yeah, the pure wrestling rules at the time, if I, you know, stand corrected, it was a few years back, you had three times that you could break a submission hold or any kind of hold with the rope. So if, you know, a guy puts you in the chin lock and you grab the ropes, you could do that three times. After the third time, the ref wasn't going to break the hold. You get to the ropes, you know, on your fourth rope break, the guy can hold the hold there forever and, you know, he won't let go. So it was, tried to encourage guys to try to have better reversals to moves instead of just reaching for the ropes every time. Believe closed fists, you get a warning after the first one, and then after the second one, I believe you'd lose a rope break. This is me all just jogging my memory here. I'm not sure if these are all correct or not. And I think the third one was there was a 20 count on the floor instead of a 10 count. So, you know, the rules tweaked the matches a little bit and made for some interesting scenarios. And, you know, it was just our job in that division to try to adapt to them.
RJ Brewer of Lucha Libre USA joining us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. They're going to be on the road in the next couple weeks doing TV tapings for MTV 2 and 3, and we'll get into those in a couple moments here. We're about the old school and the new school on this network, and also up as a part of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. And one of the other big questions we got to the email address, which is radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com, involved being trained by the legendary Killer Kowalski. Take us through an average day at the Kowalski institution, and he wasn't exactly, you know, our age when he was training you. So how much interaction did he actually have with the students?
When I started in 2000, he was there pretty much every day, and he would show you anything you wanted. If you asked him a question, you know, he'd pull you into the back room or get into the ring. And even at his age, you know, I think he was, 70s when I first started training, he would still get in the ring and he was still strong as an ox and put a headlock on you. You really felt it, you know, and he was really old school. He wanted to stress the reality of pro wrestling and really, push the basics, you know. Guys, when they first get into the ring, they want to learn how to do a 450 before they learn how to tie up or hit the rope. So he wasn't having any of that. He wasn't leading most of the training sessions. Mike Hollow, who was his head trainer at the time, was who was trained by Kowalski himself, was the head trainer. He's the guy who had had the hand in most of my training. But Walter was there every weekend, and anything you wanted to know, he would show you. He showed me a lot of stuff that I still use today, and. You know, he's a guy that trained some of the best. He trained Triple H. He trained Big John Studd, Perry Saturn, China. So clearly his record speaks for himself. And it was an honor, you know, to have him at your disposal to ask him anything you wanted. You know, it's really cool.
And did having him on your pedigree, so to speak, no pun intended, to Triple H, but did that help when you were starting out in the Northeast promotions and working your way around, that they could see, holy cow, he was trained by Killer Kowalski as opposed to Joe Blow Mago or somebody like
absolutely,
that?
Absolutely, yeah. All the Kowalski students, you know, when people ask, you know, because that's a common thing when you're first starting out, people ask you, who trained you? When you said Kowalski, even in Japan, when I went to Japan to wrestle, people, you know, Tatsumi Fujinami, they knew who Kowalski was. So people definitely... you know, give you a different look when they hear that somebody like that has trained you, and they, you know, like I said, they really hold them in high regard. So it's not a bad thing. It's definitely something that the wrestling promoters don't take for granted, because then they know that you know what you're doing, that you're polished. You wouldn't send people to shows that weren't ready. So, you know, it was definitely definitely a positive, very big positive.
Now, RJ, it is no secret on this network that I have a huge man crush on Triple H, and
you know,
and he also was trained by Killer Kowalski. On a joking note, you ever get to see the man there?
I know when I was training, I never saw him there. He, you know, Triple H and I had some, you know, discussions about him backstage at WWE when I was doing dark matches and stuff, and, you know, he was asking me about him and this and that, but he did go to his funeral, and from what I understand, he actually paid for it. I don't know how true that rumor is, but,
wow.
But yeah, he was there, and, always had positive things to say about Kowalski. So, no, I never met him there, But he did know I was Kowalski's student when I first started doing dark matches, and we had that kind of in common, but it wasn't anything that was, you know, started a big bond or anything.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I just have a giant man crush on him, so, you know.
Oh, no problem.
I'm like a stalker.
He's as close to the Levesque family as you can get to being on, like, the top of the runaway list.
Close to their window.
Yeah, I think he's close.
Yeah, there's that pink piece of paper that says I must stay 50 yards away now. It makes me sad.
It doesn't make you a bad person, just, you know.
Just makes you creepy.
Right.
You mentioned another legend in Tatsumi Fujinami, who American fans may know from a mini feud him and Nature Boy Ric Flair had over the WCW World Title back in the day, in the 90s. What is the you mentioned Kowalski was known in Japan for being Killer Kowalski.
Right.
How much character do you, when you work here in America and you go to Japan or go overseas, how much does your character change, or do you just
go to the ring, wrestle, not ever worry about being a heel, being a face.
Yeah, when I went to Japan, I was wrestling for Fujinami's promotion. His was more of a 70s style catch-as-can wrestling, so it was more or less going in there doing matches and letting the fans decide who they liked and who they didn't like. But it was more, not so much crazy. It was more pure wrestling, which I was used to. So, the Japanese crowds are a lot different than the American crowds. The American crowds are somewhat spoiled, I would say, in terms of what they've seen. The Japanese crowds appreciate the little things, and sometimes you think they're being quiet because you're boring them, but in reality they're studying the match, and then they'll have the polite applause when a submission hold is broken. So the Japanese style was definitely something I enjoyed, and it's very similar to my style in Lucha Libre USA, because I don't want to do those flips and all those Lucha Libre Andres, because that's not me, and that's not why I'm there. I'm there to, like I said, push my pure wrestling ability onto them and make a statement that way, because those guys can, do all the flips they want, but when I put a submission hold on them, then there's, no arm dragging me out of that. So it's, my style's always pretty much stayed the same, and, now that I'm in Lucha Libre USA, that's, everything I learned in the past through Japan, England, Germany, through Kowalski is what I'm applying there, and hopefully I will become the man there and win the title.
Now, mentioned... Go ahead, Spock.
Sorry, my bad. But you've been all over the world. You've been to Japan, Germany, England, all over.
Yep.
Aside from the United States, where is your favorite place to wrestle?
I enjoyed Germany. I enjoyed the fans in Germany. I only did a couple shows there, but the fans in Germany were really wild, really into it, and they were really similar to the Japanese fans, just a little different. The Japanese fans were more respectful. The German fans were just loud and crazy, but they appreciated the wrestling aspect of it. And they were really rabid. So Germany was cool. I liked the country a lot. I liked the people were different. So overall Germany was cool, but nowhere that I've ever wrestled has been a bad experience. Everywhere you go, you take something, you take the good out of it. So, whether I was in England or Germany or, United States, or wrestling in front of 10 people down the street, everything, if you're smart, you take the positive out of everything. So, there's not one place that I didn't like wrestling, but there are some specific places like Germany that stood out to be, more fun.
Of all the places that you've wrestled, because we've talked with talent on the show, superstars that have wrestled overseas in some of the worst conditions, what was the worst wrestling ring experience you ever had? Because I know from talking to men that have been in Japan, the rings there are as stiff as a professional boxing ring. And then you've got the Lucha Libre USA ring that looks like, you've mentioned, being you're not a Lucha-style wrestler. That ring almost looks like it's designed for Lucha style. So what's the hardest one for you to adapt to?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, a lot of times it can be deceiving too. Actually, Kowalski, when I first started there, right when I first started, he was actually training in a boxing ring. So, you learn to take bumps that counted and not to waste them, because you're bumping on concrete pretty much. But the Lucha Libre USA ring may look like it's, made more for the Lucha style, but it's not forgiving either. It's pretty stiff and it's pretty hard. So, I would say that ring, just because it's got six sides, and that's not something I'm used to. If you guys watched the third and fourth episode, my mom petitioned to get a four-sided ring in there, something I was much more comfortable with. And clearly, if we're in the United States, we're wrestling, in the United States, we should be using a U.S. ring, So, that ban was lifted, and now we're back to the six-sided ring. But that was that's definitely a ring that I'm going to have to learn to adapt if I want to start making an impact in that promotion, because it's definitely something that's different to me. Six sides, the ring is larger than I'm normally used to, and clearly made for guys who are running and flipping. It's more spacious. But overall, every ring has a good and a bad. The ropes are what really makes the ring, in my opinion. You get some ropes that are so loose that you hit and you're almost hitting the floor. So,
God,
You adapt to the kind of ring you're using, and that's what pros do. But I don't like the six-sided ring. I'm not happy about it, but I'll make do with what I have for now.
What's been the, I know when you were in ROH and in other promotions, you battled injuries throughout your career. What's the worst injury you have received in the ring? Was it your opponent's fault, a miscommunication overall? What was the worst injury you've ever had?
You know, I'm going to knock on wood, but I've never gotten seriously injured. I've never broken a bone. Playing college football, I broke a finger. That was the worst injury I've ever had. In wrestling, it was just mainly, you know, welts, wear and tear, you know, maybe sprained ankles, you know, strained knees and stuff like that. But I've never been severely injured. You know, I've always had matches where I've walked out and I said, damn, you know, that was awful. And you know, I need a massage and stuff. But I've never gotten seriously injured. There's a big difference between being injured and hurt, you know. I always was hurt after some matches. Not always, but quite a bit. But injured to the point where I couldn't compete. I would say right when I left Ring of Honor, you know, I had taken 5 months off from wrestling. It was my decision to just kind of take some time off. At the time, mentally, I wasn't with it. My back was really in pain. I was building a new house, so everything kind of was piling up at once, and I decided to step away. And I think a lot more guys should do that because it really gives you time to rejuvenate your body and your mind and kind of put things in perspective. So, you know, I think rest is mandatory, but a lot of times in wrestling, especially guys who have jobs that will be taken by the next guy, don't want to take those vacations, you know. But I think it's probably smarter if the promotions, you know, WWE and TNA, those guys started rotating guys on and off, which I heard they are doing a little more now. So, you know, injuries in wrestling is not preventable. It's a physical sport. So I've just been fortunate that I haven't had any serious injuries besides your normal wear and tear stuff.
Just one more quick one with the injury thing. I had a green kid blow a spot and break my tailbone and give me a concussion.
Jesus.
In a match. So that's pretty much, you know, the last time I really seriously pursued wrestling as a career instead of just a weekend hobby. What is the worst time that you've been in a ring and had a spot blown or had somebody screw up so bad that they may not have injured you, but they hurt you pretty good?
You know, I've been pretty lucky. I mean, there's been a time where I've been punched, you know, on the top of the head or, you know, got a knock in the face or, you know, knocked up against the ropes, and those ropes are pretty stiff, you know, with my nose, and I've busted my nose open. You know, but that happens, you know, you get kicked, you get, you know, you get punched. But severe injuries, like I said, there's been nothing, that I've gone through in my past 10 years that has actually really hurt me, that someone's actually messed up. I've been very fortunate. You know, I've heard tons of stories, and I've seen, you know, guys crippled, obviously. You know, you see, hear some of the stories of guys who, you know, can't walk anymore. I've been lucky, and I think a lot of it is, not so much relying on your opponent, but, you know, taking your own bumps and really protecting yourself when you're in there, because, you know, clearly your opponent has a lot to do with it also, but you gotta really protect yourself. You gotta make it a priority to make sure you don't get hurt and not rely on the other guy so much.
He is RJ Brewer of Lucha Libre USA, joining us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. Alan Wojcik and the Spud Guy from Wrestle Talk Radio, which is heard on this network on Sunday nights. This coming Saturday, August the 28th, the Bojangles Coliseum in North Carolina, I believe that's in Charlotte, North Carolina,
is where you
can see Lucha Libre USA, and you can find out ticket information through Ticketmaster.com or the company's home site, which is LuchaLibreUSA.com. We'll go ahead and give some information about that event later on. For fans that aren't aware of it, Lucha Libre USA has been on MTV for about a month or two, but how did RJ Brewer come to Lucha Libre USA, and overall, how do you feel RJ Brewer is been received by the general public? Do you feel it's getting where Lucha Libre USA wants it to be and your mom wants it to be?
Well, I think, you know, I've clearly made an impact with my words. You know, I came out on the very first episode and I said that, you know, I'm from Phoenix. You know, what I see wrong is a lot of things in the company. I see guys who are hiding behind masks, who are wearing capes, who are doing backflips and not speaking English. And we're in America. I understand it's called Lucha Libre, but it's also called USA, and that's exactly where we are. So I think my statements have been bold, and a lot of people think they're racist or they're ignorant, but I think I'm a realist. You know, I think if you're in our country and you want to wrestle in front of fans who live in the United States, you should learn our language. You know, and there are some guys there that do speak the language. Like I said, there's a lot of wrong there, and I think it's my job to make it right. And unfortunately, my wrestling hasn't done too much of the talking yet because I've lost both my matches.
Magno, you can say his name. Don't be embarrassed. You got beat by a big, talented wrestler, RJ.
I'm not embarrassed. You know, Magno beat me twice, and some people say Magno out-wrestled me, but I think he out-luchaed me. You know, he took advantage of me being ignorant to the Lucha Libre rules, and I don't think I should be, I should study those rules because that's not my style, and that's not why I'm there. You know, I'm not
being pulled off the naughty in that country, we found out, thanks to his little chicanery, so to speak.
Right. So I learned a lesson from those two matches, and I guarantee you it won't happen again. So I have some revenge to score with him, and I will. You know, just be a matter of time.
Now, RJ.
Yeah.
This is America. This is the land of opportunity. Equal opportunity, might I add.
Right.
You know, I really don't think you have an excuse with the you didn't know the rules bit, because, well, you should have if you're going to wrestle for him. But that's not the point of the question. Do you, as a wrestler in that promotion and trying to do your mother's work, find it difficult to wrestle there when some of those guys you just don't understand?
Yeah, I didn't say I stated what my goals are. I didn't say that it was going to be easy. You know, it's just like my mother's job in Arizona. She's trying to get the support of the government, who doesn't want to do anything to help her. You know, in my job in Lucha Libre USA is the same situation. It coincides just on a smaller level. You know, my mom's dealing with a state. I'm dealing with a wrestling promotion, and no, I didn't say it was going to be easy. I realized that there are a lot of obstacles that I need to get, to get over, including the Lucha Libre USA management, because they're clearly pro Lucha Libre. That's what the company's there for. So I'm battling a bigger battle than just the wrestlers there. So, it might be something where I get to realize that I can't do it by myself, and I might need to get some help. But there's nobody in that locker room that I trust right now, because I think they're all either illegal immigrants or sympathizers. So I need to, pick my battles wisely and start getting some allies.
So you're not Corleone and Solid have wrestled, because Marco Corleone and Solid have wrestled in Mexico, you're thinking they're sympathizers and they couldn't be prospective allies in your battle?
Well, yeah, Marco Corleone lives in Mexico, you know, and he's embraced that lifestyle. He's embraced the Lucha Libre lifestyle. So, in my opinion, he's not somebody that I could go to tag up, and Solid is basically his right-hand man. So, I'd rather not align with them, because, in my opinion, they've sided with the enemy already.
The shows that are featured right now on Lucha Libre USA took place in the Las Vegas Thomas and Mack Center, and then you're going to be in Charlotte, and then later on, you're actually going to be heading, well, pretty close to Texas. When you're visiting other parts of the country that aren't close to the border, are you finding sympathy from these people? Or when you're in certain cities like Corpus Christi coming up, are you expecting to see people protesting your beliefs?
Well, let me tell you what. The tapings we did in Las Vegas was the first live event we did since the show's been on television. And when I walked out there, I thought the place was going to mob me. I mean, there's little kids, flipping me the bird and people. The second my music hit and I walked out there, it was like, 2,500 people wanted to kill me. So clearly the Lucha Libre USA audience is mostly Latinos, and a lot of them aren't going to agree with what I'm saying. So I'm prepared to go to different states. Like you said, August 28th in Charlotte and then September 9th in Corpus Christi. I'm prepared to go to those states and have people, not too fond of me being in their town. So far, not too many supporters. There are a few smart people out there that are cheering for me, but for the most part, they're adversaries.
Is there and not to tease the idea of it, but be honest, with your mom's stroke, are you possibly recruiting people from other promotions to come in here? It's just us. There's not, I mean, millions of people listening right now, but they're not going to talk. Be honest with us, RJ. You're using your mom's office to get guys to come in here. You've got the Red State people and the Tea Party people, wrestlers lining up, don't you?
You know, I have been contacted by a few people who have expressed interest, and they are fighting the same fight I am. You know, they're living in a state where there's hostility because of illegal immigrants, and they want, you know, they want the borders secured. But we don't just let anybody come into our our camp. You know, you gotta show that you really believe it, because a lot of people might be trying to set us up. You know, so we're not just gonna, you know, take a phone call or an email and say, yeah, hey, come join us. We have to really have to test these people. We have to test their knowledge of Stateville 1070 and find out what they know about it and how committed they are to it, and to what length they'll really enforce it like we are.
So the Patriot Act comes in handy during investigations, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Spug wants to lighten things up with it. As we mentioned to our listeners all the time, we are about the seriousness here, but Spug's the one that likes to lighten things up, so go ahead and take it away, Spug.
I'm ready.
And he's not. Is he smoking a cigarette?
I muted my microphone.
He's sitting there. He's checking his information to make sure you're not coming for him there, RJ.
All right, no problem. I get to plug my cell phone in anyhow. I'm good.
But you've wrestled all over the globe, many different countries. But
I've never been to Mexico.
But I'm pretty sure that you've never been asked this. Many people can be judged and stereotyped by the type of underwear that they wear.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
What type of underwear is RJ Brewer?
I always embrace boxer briefs. You know, ever since those were invented, I think there's no other way to go. My dog still wears boxers, believe it or not.
What?
But, yeah, oh yeah, my dog, yeah, he's like a person. But, yeah, I still wear boxer briefs, and that's pretty much all I wear. Either that or nothing at all, you know?
Okay, so he's different. He gave a different answer than Kenny King did last week. Kenny King was going on about, he was a silky pair of boxer briefs that made the women swoon, and it was like, huh?
and that may be true. I just, you know, in terms of being comfortable, those are the ones that I prefer.
Yeah. All right, but now it's story time, and this is the standard question that everybody gets asked, and most people actually answer it fairly truthfully. Some duck and dodge it, no names. But you know, I've been in the back, I've pulled some and had some pulled on me. The best one was is I had Tiger Balm put in my tights before I put them on.
Ow.
Yeah. So, the best rib that you've seen pulled on you, or pulled on somebody?
I thought you were going to ask me the steroid question. That's what I thought you were going to ask. But the rib question. Okay. You know what? I've had little ribs played on me. You know, keys being people hiding my keys and that kind of stuff. But nothing ever serious. I never got shit in my bag or oil, you know, thrown on my tights or anything. Nothing like that. Nothing serious. One thing that we did to a rookie back at the Chaotic Training Center, which was Kowalski School after his school closed down, where I was training, is there was a new kid that had come in, and we played a rib on him where we asked, basically somebody, another guy would tell the kid, hey, go talk to RJ. Go tell him you heard about his brother. and the kid would ask, you know, what's up with his brother? And then they would say that, well, his brother's a push-up champion. He holds the record for the most consecutive push-ups. So the kid would come up to me and say, hey, I heard your brother's really good at push-ups. And I would flip out, grab him, throw him up against the wall, and I'd start crying. And I'd say, you think it's funny my brother doesn't have any arms, you know? And basically the kid, you know, these kids would turn bright red and almost to the point, you know, it's not true. My brother doesn't really have no arms, but, it was just a rib and, to the point where the kid was almost in tears, like saying he didn't know, he was sorry, but I think mostly he was sorry because he thought he was going to get his ass kicked, you know? But then, after seeing him sweat and piss a little bit, then we would break it to him. But, we played that on a couple people, which I thought was pretty funny. Obviously it's not funny if somebody doesn't have any arms, but for that specific rib, it was pretty comical, you know?
Okay, so it's not Steve Corino and C.W. Anderson in a drag bar in Thailand.
No, nothing ever like that. I mean, when I was in Japan, you know, I got taken out to a bar and got completely, you know, really, really drunk to the point where I couldn't walk. And it was more like a test, like, hey, can this kid drink? And I think I passed because they stopped feeding me shots. But, you get little hazing stuff like that. But it's never been anything to the point where I was embarrassed the next day. People have left me alone. I'm not sure why, but they have.
Is the red light district over there called Roppongi or something like that? Is that like an area that you're supposed to go, not supposed to go? Is that it?
No, we went there. It's more Americanized. It's the Americanized part of Tokyo, I believe. So it's where a lot of like the Hard Rock Cafe in Tokyo was there, and a lot of the American style restaurants. We actually ate at the Outback Steakhouse in Japan. The food was horrible. You know, one of the Japanese guys wanted to try American food, and we went there, and it was awful. When you're in Japan, you know, you got to eat Japanese food. You got to eat the native stuff, because you go to those kind of Americanized restaurants, and they're just not the same.
Got an email question from Mike Ligori of Tampa, Florida. Wants to know, RJ, being an island to yourself as it seems, is there a possibility if you're unable to obtain the Lucha Libre Heavyweight Championship, we could see you going for the tag belts?
You can't jump the gun. The Lucha Libre USA Heavyweight Championship is clearly the most coveted one. So, to say that I may not be able to get it, I don't take no for an answer. I'm gonna do everything I can to win that title. And then when I'm the champion and I'm the king of the jungle in Lucha Libre USA, that's when I'll start making more rules. You know, right now I better get there first. And, I will have a tournament match pretty soon, and, I will come out on top. I promise. And I will try to win that title. And, if I don't win that title, maybe the tag team tournament is something that I might want to enter, but again, there's nobody right now in that company that I would want to team with, so it's kind of a tricky deal, you know. I'm focusing on that heavyweight championship because I've always been like, you know, like he emailed. I stand alone. I'm on my own island, and I don't see the island being, you know, any more sunny than me with the title. So that's my goal right now, and I'm keeping that goal within sight.
Spug's a part of a show on Wednesday nights on this network called Utaku Talk Radio, and him and Mace, who sometimes appear on this show, have an affection for people that are not the right height. What do you call them, Spug?
Midgets!
Okay, ask the question, because you asked Marco Corleone, so feel free to ask him.
When are we going to see an RJ Brewer mini wrestler?
And would you like that idea?
Explain that. You want to see me versus a mini wrestler, or you want to see me?
No, because you have Mini Park and Pequeno Halloween, and we joked around with Corleone. We said, is there ever a possibility of Pequeno Corleone? Is if you could find somebody, I'll take it. Could that, would that be an insult to you, or is that a compliment to you that they would want that?
Two things. Number one, there's only one RJ Brewer, so whether, you know, if a mini version of RJ Brewer is going to be created, he's got to realize that he's going to be not only half my size, but he's going to be half the man, because, you know, I'm by myself, you know. So if a mini version of me comes along, great. It's going to be at my discretion. I'm going to choose who it is. And number two, he's got to be American. So, it could happen somewhere down the line. You never know, but it's not fair for me to be beaten up on mini, so if I do run into a problem with some of those loudmouth miniature wrestlers, I might have to get myself some backup from Arizona. You know.
Now, you stated that your goal right now is to win the Lucha Libre Heavyweight Championship, and they're holding a tournament for it.
Right.
If you were to win this tournament and be crowned Lucha Libre Heavyweight Champion, you would obviously have some stroke within the company.
Correct.
Are there any edicts that you can share with us that you would pass down as Lucha Libre Heavyweight Champion?
Does Mom have anything on the list that you want to have done if you become champ? I think he's kind of going there, but he's not going political, or he is.
I understand. Well, number one, the six-sided ring would be banned for good. You know, we got it banned for two events, and unfortunately, the commission in Las Vegas was spineless, and they're the ones that brought it back, you know. That would probably be our number one goal. Number two would be, you know, we'd start checking guys' IDs and make sure they're there properly, because if they're not, then they shouldn't be in our country. They shouldn't be working, because let's face it, you know, you need a visa to work in our country, and my gut tells me these guys don't have them and they're not here properly. So we start cleaning up the trash, trying to make the American element more prevalent in the promotion, if you know what I mean.
The next event is this Saturday at the Bojangles Coliseum. Has there been any thoughts of the possibility of you splitting the audience with ROH? Because I believe they're going to be in the same area. Has Lucha Libre USA thought of that, or are they just, the heck with it, we're Lucha Libre USA, we can come in and do what we want?
Yeah, that's management's thing. That's not mine, so I'm not exactly sure what their thinking is. But I think it's two totally different demographics, to be honest with you. I mean, I think Lucha Libre USA is focusing on the, on the Latino population and that demographic. So, and Ring of Honor's got their core fan base, and, they've got their hardcore fans who are going to go to the show no matter what. So I don't think, to be honest, I don't know how close the shows are to each other, but to be honest, I don't think there's going to be too much crossover. I don't think there's going to be too much fighting of fans of where they should go. I think the fans who are going to go to the Lucha Libre USA shows might not necessarily know about Ring of Honor, and the Ring of Honor fans may know about the Lucha Libre show, you know, because it's on TV and it's getting some widespread coverage, but they're probably going to prefer to go to the Ring of Honor show because that's their thing, you know. So I don't think there's going to be too much competition there. City's a big place and there's a lot going on. And I think, like I said, Lucha Libre USA's goal is to market their specific audience. And I don't see too much conflict there. But you know, from what I did find out today, is that Reed Flair and David Flair will be at the show, Lucha Libre USA show.
Those are
on
some
August
heavy names.
On August 28th also, so I guess, you know, they're fairly big names in the Charlotte area, so I'm thinking that I might try to be, to pull in some more of the casual fans, but, I just found that out today. I think Reed will be wrestling. I don't know if David Flair's going to be wrestling, but Reed Flair will be on the card, and, so that should be interesting too, and maybe bring a different dynamic to the show as well.
One of the first thoughts that came to our thought process here, and I know I just said two things in the same way, being able to wrestling fans, I'm a ridiculous junkie into wrestling, and the first I heard of this promotion, I went, oh god, this is another shot of Wrestling Society X, which did horribly because of the way it was handled. From your experience being in events, how much input has MTV had in the product, or are they completely hands-off this time?
In Las Vegas tapings, there were two of the MTV guys there. They were primarily working on like the backstage vignettes and stuff. They weren't too involved in the match preparation. So I don't know, you know what I mean? Like I said, that's more something the management deals with. I just, go out there, I do my job, I try to go out there and wrestle and, win my matches and, really, make a statement, and that's my goal. What goes on between the promotion and MTV is nothing that I really have any control over, and not a can of worms I want to open right now. I'm not sure. You know, I'm not sure how much influence they do have, and that remains to be seen how successful the show is, and and so on and so on. So I'm not exactly positive.
All right, it is this Saturday night, the Bojangles Coliseum, Charlotte, North Carolina. The doors are actually at 6:00 for VIP holders. Those tickets are $50. They get involved in a special meet and greet with the Lucha Libre superstars an hour before the event. And you can go through Ticketmaster.com or 800-745-3000.
And, something, I might want to add also is that kids, I believe under 12 get in for only $5, so it's pretty cheap.
Whoa, that's awesome.
Children under 12, I think those may have to be reserved ahead of time. But, you know, you go to LuchaLibreUSA.com and you can purchase tickets there and get the rest of the ticket information. I don't have it in front of me, but I believe there is a discounted price for kids.
I know you had another one, Spud. Go ahead and ask.
Now, RJ, we know what you're trying to do in Lucha Libre USA and clean up the trash. And we know what your mother's trying to do in Arizona and clean up the trash there. And I don't exactly have a problem with the premise of what you're trying to do. But I must say, I wholeheartedly disagree with the way some of that legislation is worded. So, here is your chance to sell me Bleeding Heart Liberal on your mother's work.
You're a Bleeding Heart Liberal? Is that what you said?
Sort of.
Well,
I'm a
part-time liberal? What is this?
I'm a registered Democrat. I am.
Welcome to
Meet
the Press.
I understand. So your main question is what is this bill all about, or you want me to try to clarify what people think or what really?
I want you to clarify and sell me on your family's work and what you're trying to do, because you know it would all be better if we all just had a basic understanding of one another as opposed to all this hate. So I figured you have an open forum here. It's just us and millions of people, so here's your shot.
Well, you know, a lot of the people who don't agree with the bill think that it encourages racial profiling, that kind of stuff, which is completely wrong. You know, nowhere does it say that if someone's got dark skin, they're going to get pulled over. You know, if for reasonable cause a police officer has to pull over somebody, and they have to hold that person until they check with the government to see if they're in the country legally, I don't see anything wrong with that. You know, if you're there legally, then, you know, there's no issues. But if you're there illegally, then there probably is an issue. Don't you think that should be that way? I mean, illegal is illegal. That's the reason it's called illegal. It's not for the law, you know. So, and the police aren't required to turn illegal immigrants over to the government. You know, it's not just illegal immigrants. It's everybody. It's geared to really clean up Arizona. Like I stated earlier, in 2009, 2010, Arizona was the leading city for kidnappings, and most of those kidnappings were from drug cartels and that stuff. You know, it was the number one city, Mexico City. So you see the trend, you know. Governor in Arizona is doing what the government doesn't want to do, and she's trying to protect the borders and protect the citizens. And I think the U.S. government is like, you know, they're way too concerned with the Taliban in Afghanistan when one of the main problems is right here on our turf, you know. So I don't think it encourages racial profiling. It's just trying to clean up the people that don't belong here and that are causing trouble. You know?
So we possibly could there possibly be an R.J. Brewer political tour somewhere? You maybe teaming up with Sarah Palin or some of these other folks that are in midterm elections somewhere, or are
no,
you just
Sarah,
sticking
no.
to what's going on in the ring?
No, Sarah Palin is not somebody I hold in high regard, to be honest with you. So Sarah
whoa,
Palin.
Whoa,
whoa,
why not? Why not? Why not? What's wrong with her other than she can see Alaska? She can see Russia from her bedroom, I think, is what she once said.
You know, I was watching a CNN special about Sarah Palin, and she said that they asked about her foreign policy experience, and she said that she could see Russia from Alaska. And then they interviewed the people on the island, the little Diomede Island there, that's part of the United States territory, and they asked, "Have you ever heard of Sarah Palin?" They said, "No, she's never been here." So just because she's a cute hockey mom doesn't make her qualified to be a president. I mean, she governed a state, more than half of it is ice. You know what I mean? So I just don't see her being qualified to run the country. I think she's maybe make good after school cookies for her soccer team or something. You know what I mean? But you got to really, run a country, and I don't think she'd be qualified for that. But, that's beside the point. No, I don't see myself getting involved in politics. I'm a pro wrestler, and that's what I want to do right now. And that's my goal, is to, make a statement in this company exactly like I'm doing, and I'm going to start winning some matches soon.
If you are in the Charlotte area and you're listening to us either live or on podcast, it is the Bojangles Coliseum, Charlotte, North Carolina on the 28th. You can also start getting your tickets now if you're in the Corpus Christi, Texas area at the Whataburger Field. That is September 9th. That event also starts at 7 p.m. That ticket office is Whataburger Field, all one word, no spaces, .com. Or for those tickets, you can call 361-561-4665. Check him out. He is on Friday nights, 10 p.m. on MTV2. And as much as he doesn't like it, he's on in Spanish on the Tres channel on Saturday nights at 10 p.m. Thank you so much for your time, RJ Brewer, and have a safe trip on your journey.
Hey, I appreciate it. And again, to all the fans listening, you know, check out LuchaLibreUSA.com if, one of the next few events isn't coming, taking place near your town. We probably will be. I know they're planning on expanding soon. So, hopefully we'll get over to Arizona and start making some noise. But, you know, friend him on Facebook. I think it's facebook.com/NASCAR Warriors, I believe. And we're all over the internet. So it's, you know, time to really, jump on this bandwagon because, good things are happening.
All right. We'll have him stay with us as we go to break here. All My World of Wrestling Radio. I'll be right back on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
My daddy served in the Army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard. Till the day that he died, he wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you.
The definitive professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene. All this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, news, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a mouse click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Big Vicious,
Mick Foley,
plus the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talent today. And the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Janice Michelle.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the $1 million man.
Paul Pony, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Van the Boogie Wiggleman.
And tomorrow.
TJ Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site the pros use. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Hey you, yeah you, the one tuned in to WildTalkRadio.com. I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you for tuning into this fine program right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Hey everyone, it's Tim Stein here to tell you about a brand new podcast debuting soon, exclusively on the Wild Talk Radio Network. The History Of will take you on a fantastic journey as we look at some of the most famous rock groups, funny people, and actors and actresses of all time. Utilizing the video abilities of Ustream as well as the lossless stereo sound of internet audio, The History Of will bring a totally new experience to Wild Talk Radio. So make sure that you join me, your host, Tim Stein, as we take a look at the history of some of your most favorite people ever. Make sure to keep a lookout for this brand new webcast coming soon, only to Wild Talk Radio.
A certain passion. Maybe you're a geek, a wrestling fan, a sex enthusiast, or you just need something to do for the evening. Then come check out the Wild Talk Radio Network, providing you with the latest in online entertainment. Whether it's getting in the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio, or getting a little R-rated with CB Radio or Anything Goes, or whether you just want to play a game of Dungeons and Dragons with the geeks over to Talkie Talk Live. All you gotta do is head on over to www.wildtalkradio.com and check out all of our daily programming. Wild Talk Radio Network. Come and get wild with us.
This is Lucha Libre USA superstar RJ Brewer from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Online World Wrestling Radio with Alan, Alan something. I'm not sure what his last name is. Watch, whatever.
Get more American than the boss, man. Welcome back to hour three. Told you, I'm going to get the show done in 2 hours one of these days if it kills me. All on Wild Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. WildTalkRadio.com is their home site. Ours is OWWRadio.com. You can also be checking us out through OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com, the big bosses, Brad Dykens, Jason Didrich. As always, I thank them for letting me sit in this chair for another week. And that was a lot of fun to to talk to RJ Brewer. And thanks to Mrs. Brewer for allowing your son to be a part of our program. We appreciate that. Definitely check it out, LuchaLibreUSA.com. Despite the rumors of rating issues and whatnot, it's still a very entertaining program. Mace and Spug have braved that long interview, and we thank them for sticking around because the biggest rumor to come out of WWE tape land, because you watched Monday Night Raw last night, you saw they're not on this week. Live. Last night was a taped show. This coming Friday is always a taped show, but this one was taped before they left for Hawaii, Japan, and mainland China, where they debuted. Two stories that came out. We'll address the one that we 100,000% can confirm, is that on TV, the Nexus is down to 6 as they took out Darren Young last week, apparently during a match with Hart Dynasty in Honolulu. Skip Sheffield's left ankle took him out of a match. He apparently has a broken left ankle and most likely will miss some TV time. Could this have come along at a worse time for this faction? Especially with the way, the strong storyline that they've had going with this group, and Sheffield being the muscle, the enforcer, so to speak, of the group, do they bring Darren Young back and go, okay, oh, you, did you learn your lesson, Darren? Or do they just go with, we're a group of five now?
I'd say go with the group of five scenario. Personally, Skip Sheffield is going to be the next Batista, big muscle-bound idiot who breaks stuff all the time. Hey!
Okay.
My attempt at humor.
That's good. No, we appreciate your humor here. Other shows may not. We do. Is he going to be missed at all, Spug, or are you just... Or is this almost feels like it's NXT all over again. They were 8, and there were 7, now there's 6. What, are we going to eliminate them all down to Wade Barrett just standing there again going, I want NXT all over again?
You know, I must say, I always miss my penis when he gets injured, so I think I think he will be missed. At least not by the normal wrestling fan, anyway.
And it's a shame. The second story is one that we cannot confirm because WWE themselves have not spoken about it, but due to Mace basically saying, we gotta talk about this, I wanna talk about this. It's like, alright, fine, we'll talk about it. The rumor around the campfire from numerous sites, including The Torch, PWI Insider, The Observer, our site, is that the Straight Edge Society is minus one talent member. And that would be Serena Deeb, who debuted several months ago by being a fan and shaving her head and becoming a member of the society. And there's several rumors going around on this one. One is that she didn't live up to her gimmick, that being the straight edge person that she's supposed to be, along with Luke Gallows, Joey Mercury, and CM Punk. Apparently, she was seen out by WWE officials and other people in the organization, maybe the wrestlers. And that's a no-no. Apparently, kayfabe lives when you're in the straight edge society. I'm at a loss for this one. We honestly think Sorokin, our tech producer who rules because he saved our interview with a couple of my screw-ups, we speculated that WWE has announced this because SmackDown's already in the can. SmackDown was filmed before everybody left for overseas, and she does have an appearance on this coming week's show. Before we open it to the two gentlemen that have stayed with us, and we really appreciate them staying with us, she announced on her Twitter account, you are the best fans in any universe. That's all she's saying. Mace, go ahead. Preach your gospel according to Mace. Is this, what are your initial thoughts in hearing this, man?
I think this is probably a really bad idea. Like, I understand, like, the whole thing behind this is a reprimand of not living up to your gimmick, but it also brings into question who is allowed to live by their gimmick and who is not. You know, it goes the same with WWE clothing policy. I believe at one time they wanted everybody to come in suits, but John Cena and The Undertaker were allowed to wear whatever they liked. You know, it seems that they're just punishing people for selective little things at random. And, yeah, it just really, really annoys the crap out of me, because if they're going to let her go, it's going to take away some of the credibility of the Straight Edge Society, and especially since she went to the trouble of saying, yes, I'm going to shave my head for the point of this angle. And that's dedication. I don't care what anybody says. That is dedication to not only the company, but to the gimmick already.
At this time, we are joined by a special contributor. Would this happen to be the one and only Doc Pepper?
Why, yes, it is. Hello.
Good evening, sir. He has very interesting video blog on ExtremeNetworkOnline.com that's known as No Holds Barred. He was able to fit us into his busy schedule because, like all of us, he did watch Monday Night Raw, and we'll address that in a minute. You watch all the shows. You've watched Raw. You watch SmackDown. You may watch Superstars. We'll let Spug in. I don't know who does. We do every so often. We have a four-hour block in my house where 8 to 9, it's them. 9 to 11, it's TNA. And if I remember to watch Reaction, it's there. To you, and then we'll go to Spug. You've heard the rumors of the release of Serena Deeb, supposedly due to not quote-unquote living her gimmick of a straight-edge society person. We can't confirm it, obviously, because WWE hasn't put anything out there. Your feelings on this and this, Doc?
Well, I will note that SmackDown is considerably less attractive having Serena no longer there. The hotness quotient of that show is now just considerably down. I mean, Cody Rhodes helps it a little, I'll admit, but, you know. Serena being gone, you know, and if it is in fact that she's not living the gimmick, it seems rather absurd considering how many times they want to remind us that it's World Wrestling Entertainment. I can understand this, you know, in another decade, not living your gimmick, outside of the arena would get you off the show or out of the company, but it just seems very bizarre today.
You're in the business, Spug. You've been in the business for years. Do you second what Mace is saying? Because, let's say, he had mentioned WWE has, I think it's still on the books, they have a wardrobe policy. I physically have seen it, having been at FCW a few times, and one of the wrestlers who will remain nameless happened to pass it to me. I'm reading this thing. I'm going, are you playing in the NBA or something that you have to be dressed like this? It was just amazing stuff. So the floor is yours, Spug. Do you second what Mace is saying, or do you have your own completely different view?
In today's day and age, when the WWE continually shoves it down our throat, this is no longer wrestling. This is entertainment, and you know, we shouldn't be, you know, so to speak, taken in by it and everything that happens. I think it's a little asinine and hypocritical of WWE to fire one of their most important players in a current storyline over something as trivial as not living your gimmick.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, you're fine.
No, I was just saying, you know, especially considering that, you know, when it comes to the women's division, and of course, you know, this is nothing new, but it always seems as if the most talented women in the company are always the first to go. Serena is fantastic both on the mic and in the ring, and it seems like, you know, not just from a storyline perspective, but from a legitimate talent perspective, a really big mistake.
Well, this isn't the first one they've made. I mean, come on, they let Mickey James go because there were two. One story was they wanted her, that she had a weight problem, and this just ended the WWE. No.
Yeah.
I don't think so. The other one was that, like Maria Kanellis, she wanted to pursue a singing career, and she did a country album. Maria did a pop album. They let Katie Burchill go. Oh, it almost seems like in certain aspects, we talk about the TNA knockout roster disappearing. Doc, it almost seems like every time I turn around, the Divas division's disappearing.
Yeah, it does seem that way. But then again, they weren't putting Serena in the ring very often, which is probably, you know, which is a crying shame. It seems unfortunate, again, because the Straight Edge Society somehow seems a lot more hollow without her. And this may just be personal, but something about it just seems empty. With just, you know, the Punk, Gallows, and Joey Mercury.
Doc Pepper, No Holds Barred, which is a video blog you can find on ExtremeNetworkOnline.com. Joining us here along with Spug and Mace from Wrestle Talk Radio. I'm Alan Wojcik here in the third hour of Online World of Wrestling Radio. We saw this week, past week on SmackDown, before SmackDown ever aired, once again, the geniuses at WWE.com, the same folks who let us know before Daniel Bryan showed up, that apparently there was an internal memo somehow accidentally left on Alberto Del Rio's profile on the site about his bio, that someone had left a note there saying something to the effect of, is this bio correct? Because I know this guy is going to be a big deal real quick. I was like, thanks for ruining that, guys. He did debut this past SmackDown, taking out fellow Hispanic star Rey Mysterio. For fans who don't know it, Alberto Del Rio wrestled as Dos Caras, also under a mask, but they decided, no, only one masked guy on here. Rate his debut for us, Doc, because you've seen they've been doing vignettes, old school vignettes on him. What do you think so far from what you've seen of him?
You know, actually, I'm right now actually in the middle of working on my review of that, in fact, SmackDown, and so I've been kind of rewatching this footage over and over again because of that fact. And I got to tell you, I wanted to hate Alberto Del Rio so much. I wanted to hate this guy, and everything about him is awesome. He comes out, he completely like envelops himself in his gimmick very well. The announcer, you know, his own special announcer coming out. The fact that he comes out in the, what was the car that he came out in?
I'm not big into cars, so I'm not 100% sure what he came out in.
I think it was a BMW. Either way, it was a very nice car. The whole thing just worked. And when he was wrestling, the guy looked like he stepped right out of the 1980s when it comes to his wrestling style. It's really, really kind of magical that way. He didn't look like a traditional TV wrestler that we're used to seeing anymore. So that was a very welcome surprise.
The other big storyline to come out of this show, we've seen before, we'll go to Spug on it in the Mace, is the continuousness of the Intercontinental title feud with Kofi Kingston and Dolph Ziggler. Are you enjoying this feud from what you've seen on pay-per-views and what you read in the notes on a SmackDown or a house show? Or are you thinking, okay, put the belt on one of them and let's move on? I lost him, didn't I? He's muted. He's smoking. That's what he's doing, man. We need to get sponsored by a cigarette company. That's what we need to get doing. What do you think, Mace, when you see this feud on paper and whatnot, especially with the additive of Vicky Guerrero being there? I mean, all this woman has to do is walk out and say, excuse me, and 15,000 people go freaking nuts. Would this angle be working without Vicky? Because I've seen Dolph Ziggler and Kofi wrestle in person here in FCW, and they're great in the ring, but what are your thoughts on this feud?
I think the advent of having Vicky there is probably what's pushing Dolph a lot more than what we realize. Personally, I just think the Dolph character's fallen flat since day one. But that he is putting on great matches with Kofi, you know. At SummerSlam, the match that they started having was not too bad. Too bad it got spoiled. Yeah, it got spoiled, which is very unfortunate. But then again, we can't have SmackDown guys looking very good on pay-per-views. But yeah, it'd be a hit and miss. I think having Vicky there plays a bigger part in Dolph's heel role than we sort of give her credit for.
Back to Doc, it looks like from what we've read and what we've seen on the show, that it looks like the Undertaker's return to SmackDown isn't going to be on the debut on Sci-Fi Network. They're teasing that he's going to be coming back in the next couple weeks. Is this a mistake? Should he have been held back until Sci-Fi Network debut, or are you fine with him coming back and assuming his championship role once again?
You know what's interesting is, and I know SmackDown seems kind of like the barren, the more barren of the shows, you know, given that it doesn't have as many, it doesn't have Edge, doesn't have Cena, doesn't have Orton, doesn't have Sheamus. But the fact of the matter is that I always feel like, for some reason, I feel like the main event in SmackDown, Like, you see CM Punk and Jack Swagger in the mid-card. And I just feel like as soon as Undertaker comes in, you know, basically, as soon as Undertaker comes into a show, everyone is now the mid-card. Everyone but who the Undertaker is feuding with is now the middle card. And that's kind of, I feel like that's going to really bury SmackDown even further than it is right now. But, you know, I could be wrong.
We've addressed this on here before, Mason. It was addressed on Wrestle Talk Radio, which is on this network on Sunday nights at 10 o'clock. Your opinion, should Taker be showing up before this pay-per-view? Should he have debuted? I believe it's October 3rd is the next WWE pay-per-view after Night of Champions, which I believe is Hell in a Cell. Is this booking wrong that they brought him out the way they did at SummerSlam? If you had control, if Stephanie Levesque said, Mace, you've got this angle, go ahead and book it, how would you have handled this?
No, I think the debut at SummerSlam was pretty much what was needed. It was well-timed. If they had tried to drag it out for another month, it probably would have gotten stale with the fans. So they've pretty much done it right, but as where they go from here, well, that's just one of those wait-and-see type deals.
I mean, we're gonna see Taker Kane, but I don't think anybody really wants nor cares about seeing Taker v. Kane. And I think that's the biggest problem that they've got, is like, they can build up the storyline just fine, it's a decently told storyline, but is Taker v. Kane in 2010 really going to sell tickets?
Well, I can pose that question. Go ahead, Spug, take that one for us.
Yes, it's going to sell tickets because it's Undertaker and because it's Kane. And the retard marks have proven that time and time again, they will shell out to see those two no matter how old they are.
Yeah, I guess you're correct on that matter. I think it's going to end up probably going away. It's going to end up being a really forgettable feud, but I don't want to act like I can predict the future. But I don't see a lot coming out of this. I don't want this feud dragged out for too much longer. But then again, you know, after Kane, who does The Undertaker feud with and why? None of it makes sense from this point forward.
It's an interesting one. Jersey Girl in our chat room is mentioning, do you think it could be stretched out possibly to WrestleMania 27? I can't see Taker and him being stretched out that far. I mean, it's another 6 months away.
Kill me, please. Jesus, no. Sorry. But, man, does that sound tormenting.
The other interesting thing that's happened in the last couple weeks is, I believe it happened 2 weeks ago on Monday Night Raw, we got new tag belts. The unified WWE Tag Team Championships have been taken away. And basically being known as the WWE Tag Team titles, this came from a source in WWE that I will not reveal, that apparently Vince McMahon himself made the decision to rename the championships because he wanted new belts to be marketed. Shocking there. Another reason, and this one is kind of interesting, was given for the change that it's easier for talent to pass through airports with one set of championship belts than the two. It is currently unknown if the belts will be considered a brand new championship or they will carry on the lineage of the belts. If you had a chance, go to WWE.com, go to other sites, and you'll take a look at these belts. To Doc and then around to the other two gentlemen, are you okay with these belts that they put on? Because they look nothing like either of the... of any of the championship belts that are here. They almost look like they went to a store and said, hey, those will work, bring them in.
I will say firstly that I am in fact glad that they actually unified the belts. You know, having every tag team walk around with four freaking belts just looked ridiculous every time. So I am glad they unified them. The new belt design, though, is a little absurd. They look like toys. Like, when you really look at them up close, they look like toys that you would buy, which kind of, you know, makes sense, this new story that Vince McMahon wants to market them. They don't look very prestigious. Excuse me, my throat is kind of sore right now. So glad that they did it, but those designs are pretty freaking ridiculous, yeah.
To Spug, what are you thinking of these new belts? Do they look like something like your daughter or your cousin or your nephew would walk into the house with, or do they look like legitimate world tag?
No, they look like crap toy belts, and I think it's shameful that you would allow your promotion, you know, the biggest wrestling promotion in the world, to have something like that. You take a look at all the classic belts that have gone through there, the Winged Eagle, the Smoking Skull, the original tag belts, the Intercontinental belt, all well-designed and well-represented belts. And then you get to this, whatever that those things are. You know, last I checked, this wasn't Battle of the Thunderdome. This was wrestling.
Okay, Mace, you're into the business as well. If you were one of the world tag team champs and they came to you and said, "All right, these four belts go bye-bye, you get this one," are you sitting there going, "Nice belt," or are you going, "Give me them back, I like this double tag team looking thing"?
I'd probably go, I'll take one set of those belts and give you the other one. And let's just modify them a little bit. These new belts, and I'm currently on a site that is well known for selling wrestling replica belts, taking a look at the titles, and I'll be honest with you, these look like belts that you'd see in your local indie fed that only has, you know, $50 to $100 to spend on a belt.
Yeah.
Yeah, instead of going out and actually getting full done custom, it looks like they've gone to a random belt website that sells belts for $100 and gone, "We'll take two of those."
Wow. They don't look like belts from the biggest dog in the park. You know, they don't look like WWE belts at all.
Well, one of the folks in our chat room brought this. Let me cut you off for a second. One of the folks in the chat room just brought this up. Jersey Girl wants to know, for all of us, I guess, what's the worst looking belt? The new tag belt or the current Divas Championship belt?
I think they're both equally wretched. The thing with the Divas Championship belt, though, is that's so gaudy, not even Paris Hilton would wear it.
So you don't think Melina looks good walking around with that belt?
I think Melina looks good, period, but that's not the point.
Speaking of Melina, she defended her championship again this past Monday Night Raw, defeating the worst singer in the history of anything, Jillian Hall, and I'm still amazed that this 900th episode of Monday Night Raw that they're so touting is only going to be a two-hour deal, it looks like. She looks like to be heading into a feud with Lay Cool and their cut-up-looking belt. They basically offered Melina an invitation, which I thought was kind of funny, to say, she works for the show, she's going to be there, geniuses. To Mace, then back around, are we interested at all in an interpromotional feud? Shouldn't this be saved for a couple months to maybe, and to stretch this out, even to do a unification match later on at WrestleMania or even Survivor Series? Or is this a rumor? There's only been a couple matches announced for this Night of Champions event. Or are you just taking your traditional meh opinion on this Divas feud?
As I said before, you know, I'm a big advocate of women's wrestling. You know, anything that sort of gets it over works. However, I see this just being a ploy as to try and get a women's match going on Night of Champions. Because you got to remember, at these Night of Champions things, every now and again, they like to throw in, you know, brand versus brand to see who the best champion is. And let's be honest, there's not really much you can do with the women's division in WWE at the moment. So this looks like probably the better booking choice that they can make at the moment.
Okay, Doc, you're in charge here. Are you liking this direction that they're going? That they're gonna looks like it's gonna be one belt, maybe not. What's your overall take on this?
Well, the unfortunate part about it being one belt is I'm willing to bet money that the Divas belt is gonna be the thing that survives out of this whole thing, which is just unfortunate.
Unless Teddy Long's got some glue to put that other bell back together.
There we go. There's a plan. I'm okay with this because Night of Champions, I mean, you're going to have to represent both titles, and doing that in one match, you know, reduces the amount of Michelle McCool. It makes it so we don't have to sit through two Divas matches in a pay-per-view, which I am generally okay with.
Now, we all know you have a man crush on Triple H, and I kind of am a fan of Layla as a whole here, and we all know who Miss McCool is married to, Spug, Dead Man Music playing in the background. Would you like to see this Lay Cool thing just go away and let Layla go on her own and Michelle be on her own, or are you a fan of Lay Cool?
I am not a fan of Lay Cool, and I'm really not a fan of Michelle McCool. A little side story for you real quick, Alan. And I told it a couple weeks ago on WTR, but I forget where I was reading it at. But there's apparently they were at a house show when preparing for SummerSlam, and they had brought in a couple local girls to work with Melina and so forth. And one of the girls was in there before just about everybody else and set her bag down in the locker room, and it was where Michelle McCool wanted to set her bag. And McCool got in this girl's face and started screaming, "Do you know who I am? And do you know who I'm married to?"
Wow.
And wow. ripped this girl apart. And this little girl had done nothing wrong. You know? Had done absolutely nothing wrong. And so I wish they would just get rid of Michelle McCool. She does nothing for the business. She does nothing for that belt. She can barely wrestle. I would be surprised if that woman knew how to find Undertaker's zipper.
Whoa, now, man, that's a low blow. Before anybody else goes anywhere else, Maria Kanellis, who also got the Future Endeavor, to defend Michelle from her standpoint in her YouTube Kayfabe Commentaries, and we're working on some stuff with KayfabeCommentaries.com to be a part of this event that we do every week. She had said that, oh, Michelle gets a real bad rap, and I'm paraphrasing, so I apologize if I get her quote wrong, but she said something to the effect that, you know, Michelle gets a really bad rap, but she's in there every time Fit Finley and whoever else is involved with the women's division, Divas division is there. She's in there, and she's working it from the beginning to the end. So you end up in the middle on there. Let's move on from one diva to another. That would be Tamina, who is getting into... I'm amazed that Santino gets these ladies, because Santino Marella looks like he's got himself someone smitten with him. For those who watched 2 weeks ago, you saw what happened with Tamina getting, I believe she patted him on the butt or something close to that, to Doc Pepper, and then we'll go around. Are you liking Santino and Vladimir doing this shtick? And what do you think of this teasing of Tamina and him? Because I saw your blog a couple weeks ago, and you're like, "Hey, water slide, there they go! Whoa, and another water slide, there they go again." I mean,
first off, when it comes to Santino and Vlad, I liked it a lot more when it was a sitcom idea. I want to note that. That I was down for. Having it on my wrestling show, not so much. As far as Tamina, and God, I feel like a total jerk, like a total pig when I say this, but she is not the best looking woman on that show. She inherited a lot of her face from her father. I'll just say that much. God, I feel like a total pig. So, you know, good for Santino, good on him. But there you go. I think it's a neat little storyline. It does unfortunately bury the Usos, which I think had a lot of potential. I mean, their match last night on Monday Night Raw was basically just to serve the Santino Tamina storyline. So that bothers me, that other things are being sacrificed for what is, in effect, a comedy segment.
Well, I know Mace and Spug are all about the ha-ha, as we found out during our interview with Mark Jindrak, Marco Corleone, and then recently R.J. Brewer, their love of midgets. Couldn't they have picked a better-looking girl, Mace, than Miss Snooka? Or are you like, whatever, it works with Santino, or are you thinking, hey, this is a good time to change that channel, see what's going on the Home Shopping Network?
For one, I would never watch the Home Shopping Network.
Okay.
I have the internet for my shopping, goddammit. Second, yeah, they could have gone with somebody better than Tamina. They could have gone with Natty Neidhart. Or Serena. If they didn't decide to boot her butt out the door, supposedly, you know, turn this whole incident of, she's drinking alcohol, blame it on Santino. Sure, it means moving Santino to SmackDown, but come on, it's not like anybody would really miss him.
And it would give
make it that Vladimir did it.
It would give us the CM Punk Santino Marella feud that we've all been asking for so many years.
It'd with
be
one
great.
Of them managed
and
by Jim Cornette.
You add in the Big Show and turn it into one gigantic comedy clusterfrag. It'd be hilarious.
I'm down for it.
See, I really don't think Tamina's that bad looking. I really don't.
I wouldn't kick her out of bed. You know, I would. Like, you know, like in all fairness, she's.
I don't
very
think
attractive.
You could. She might kick you out of bed.
Very good point. No, certainly that's true.
But no, I mean she's not completely unfortunate looking. I mean, on a scale of 10, she's probably about a 6.5.
Yeah,
which isn't,
yeah.
I mean, she's not completely ugly. And
no. And
Santino, the facial expressions provided by Tamina, and the fact that she hasn't said anything directly to Santina, it's all been body language and gestures and so on and so forth. And it's all been psychology and body language that this whole storyline has really taken place with is fantastic. Fantastic.
Oh, absolutely. The other person that actually came up in a conversation Sir Rock and I had this afternoon, and I was watching the rewind of Monday Night Raw, was the on-screen relationship of Maryse and Ted DiBiase Jr. Or sorry, Ted DiBiase, I guess we dropped the Jr. now that he's established really well. And I remarked it, and I know Spug is going to laugh at this because of my not great like for ECW, but from a conversation I had with an ECW original being Shane Douglas, this reminded me of when I talked to him about the way a valet should be used in the business. The way that they're pairing these two almost seems like the way Shane was with Francine, that he got himself over a little bit. And then he stepped and let her get the cock of the walk, as he referred to it. To Doc Pepper and then to Mason Spug, are you a fan of this pairing of Teddy and Maryse? Or would you like Teddy to be solo?
Well, not that I'm not a big fan of Ted to begin with. I actually like Cody out of the two former Legacy members. But what I will say is that Maryse completes the look. Like that just feels right. When he comes out with a beautiful blonde on his arm, like that's it. That looks exactly right. That completes that character really well. So yeah, I would definitely say that like that's exactly they did that perfect. That's exactly correct.
Yeah, you just made my 8-year-old daughter angry because she loves Teddy.
Oh really?
Oh, he was here in FCW. I was helping out with their PR and doing their music at events, and Ted was one of the guys that every event, even if I had to stall for a few minutes and run around and do stuff, Ted would stop whatever he was doing and play with her, try to steal whatever M&M candy we had with her. And I'm like, and I'm the exact opposite. I'm a fan of Teddy's work. I think the character is getting over. Shame that he had a fall with Randy Orton and John Morrison the way he did. To Mace, then over to Spug,
would you like to see this or this feud with Morrison and DiBiase go longer and maybe add the on again, off again, real love interest of Morrison, Melina Perez into this?
To be honest, I can't really tell you because I didn't see the start of the feud. However, I can make a comment on Teddy and his whole thing with the arm candy. You know, it's pretty much dead on, as Doc said. You know, it completes the look. I just wish they'd bring back the priceless music. Please bring that music back. I hate the fact that he's still using Legacy for no reason at all.
Yeah, actually, even the theme that they used for Money in the Bank, the one by I Fight Dragons, like that one even works for Ted DiBiase. Like that would even be better. Like the Legacy thing makes no sense. I'll agree with you there. Yeah.
Hell, even give him some sort of remix version of his dad's theme.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they could mix that up a bit and put it to the boy. They're giving him everything else.
Yeah.
To Spug, what are your thoughts on Ted DiBiase and the current status of his role in WWE?
I think they're using him poorly. I like Ted DiBiase over Cody Rhodes out of Legacy. I thought DiBiase has more charisma than Rhodes.
But he's dashing, man. Now he's dashing Cody Rhodes.
No. The dashing's just the PC way of saying queer.
Hey!
Really?
Oh yeah.
Because he's doing all the manscaping and all that other, all those helpful hints that he's giving the people.
Look, man, you got to look good in San Francisco if you're going to catch the right one.
Wow. Well, he looked good enough because on tonight's Sci-Fi, he made a guest spot on the very popular Warehouse 13. So hopefully you DVR'd that event. That's actually a real fun show. The one annoying thing, and I've been waiting to talk about this, but figured we would break down the rest of this show, and it's weird because we don't have a pay-per-view for a couple weeks, so we can't talk about every single thing. The most annoying thing out of this entire two-hour show is that it meant jack crap. Because you had the anonymous general manager on his little laptop, or her, we don't know, could be a woman, I don't know, had Sheamus sit on a throne that they found in the King of the Ring locker, and watch Edge defeat Ron Killings, Chris Jericho take out the Great Khali, The Miz take out John Cena by DQ, thanks to Daniel Bryan, and you saw Randy Orton take out Morrison and DiBiase. And then you had Sheamus come out and go, I have decided who I'm going to wrestle. Fella. Sorry, Mace does it better than me.
Fella.
I'm going to wrestle Zack Ryder in a match that I think was about as long as King Kong Bundy SD Jones. So you get Wade Barrett coming out. Like, wait. I won Nexus. I won season one of NXT. The ban's been lifted by the GM on title shots for those kids. Yay. Just what I want to see, a Heath Slater tag title run. I know Spud does. So Barrett's like, all right, cool. You're going to take this time off. You defended your belt. You're going to take 30 days off. No, you're not. You're defending against me at the show. Well, the GM says what basically I just did, and I'm sure Doc Pepper's going to say on his video blog, yet you watch Monday Night Raw for nothing, because the Night of Champions already announced, it's the only match that's announced, Sheamus will defend in a six-pack challenge, taking on Wade Barrett, Randy Orton, Edge, Chris Jericho, and your fan of mine, Marky Mark himself, John Cena. Too Spug, because he knows my affectionate dislike of Cena. Couldn't you have plugged four other different people in this thing, man? Or are you fine with this match that you're seeing? Or will see on the 19th?
I'm fine with Orton. I think they should have made it some sort of stipulation. Put it in a Hell in a Cell.
You can't. Got the pay-per-view on October 3rd, Hell in a Cell.
Oh, forget that. Do something, man. We're going to put six guys in the ring, and we're going to call it a six-pack challenge, and we're probably going to be all guys that are involved in the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view in the next month in some way, shape, or fashion. Let's just call a spade and call WWE greedy for all this crap.
Okay, to Doc Pepper, are you fine with the six people, the five additions to this match? Because Sheamus has to be there. He's the champ for the moment. Would you take out anybody and put somebody else into this, or are you fine with these six people?
Well, John Cena is a given, and so that's three people there. Orton is also a given, just simply because he's the second most over guy in the WWE. I think I could be wrong in saying that. So really, like, the last two slots are really the only two ones up for question, which is Edge and Jericho. And truth be told, what the heck else are you going to do with Edge and Jericho? I mean, would I like to see, like, Evan Bourne in that match and him doing a really impressive showing and kind of, keep him in talks for main event? Yeah. But I understand where they went with putting Edge and Jericho in those final two slots. Well, the one interesting thing about yesterday's Raw was it was terrible for exactly the reasons that you said. But what's worse is that Jerry Lawler even said as much. As soon as Randy Orton called out Zack Ryder, Jerry Lawler, he goes, "Does that mean that every match that we've watched was for naught?" I couldn't help but just laugh and facepalm. I realized, yes, that is exactly what this means, and you just said it out loud.
Yep, he's done that twice. He called him Superman. Called Cena Superman a couple weeks ago, and I was like, he's been listening to the show. He's been listening to the Sunday Night Show, because Omega Will, Spud Mace, and Tim Stein refer to him as Superman every single pay-per-view. To Mace, you heard the names that are in this match, and we'll run them again. It's the champ, Sheamus, Wade Barrett, Randy Orton, Edge, Chris Jericho, and John Cena. Are you fine with this match, or do a couple people need to get out and let new talent in?
It's all right. I reckon you could probably take John Cena out and replace him with Zack Ryder.
There we go.
Yeah. Zack Ryder goes, I wasn't ready, damn it! I need another match!
However, I just really dislike the idea of calling it a six-pack challenge, because, frankly, yeah, they did that originally when you had Stone Cold Steve Austin as the special enforcer / referee for the match due to an injury and having to give up the title or something like that. I can't remember. It was 1998. Change the name of it for one. Hell, even just call it a mini battle royal or something. Six-pack challenge just doesn't make any sense in this day and age.
You know what, Mace? I just wanted to throw this out there real quick. The Elimination Chamber pay-per-view is far enough away. Bring in the chamber!
You just want to see an Elimination Chamber match. That's all you want.
No! No! Listen. Triple threats, fatal four ways. That's fine. You don't need steel cages and gimmicks for that. When you have six individuals in the ring, you gotta have something. Because you can't just throw them all there and go, guess what, you're wrestling for the title, and go.
Well, wait, hold on a second. Is this going to be a six-way scramble match, or do we know if this is two guys in the ring, the other four have to tag in and out? Have we seen rules on this one yet, guys? And would you be fine with a scramble match between these six? I don't know how it would work, but
traditionally, the six-pack challenge type match was a tag. Only two guys allowed in the ring at a time, and tags had to be done, and it was anybody tag anybody.
Okay, so it's the chamber without a chamber.
Yeah, a scramble would be different. Yeah, get everybody in there at once and just let them all wail on each other. Texas Tornado rules. I miss those days.
Or you can, or since Sheamus is the champ, we can have it as like an Irish barroom brawl or something. Be like, I'm the champ, Barrett's a bare-knuckle fighter, let's get it on.
The other match that looks like is possibly going to happen at this Night of Champions event on September 19th is the one that we wanted to see months ago, but a necktie and other stuff eliminated that happening for a little bit. And that would be Daniel Bryan getting his hands finally one-on-one with Mike Muzanin, The Miz. To Doc Pepper, is this the match? Should this match happen at Night of Champions, or should this be held back to either Hell in a Cell or the October 24th pay-per-view?
I absolutely think that Daniel Bryan needs to be in a pay-per-view. I mean, he is the talk of, well, I shouldn't say he's the talk of the whole wrestling world, but he is certainly, in the internet, he is being much talked about. And in general, they want to push him into the main event. And so, yeah, I think he needs to be in a pay-per-view because he has yet to see one, be in a pay-per-view. And this would be the perfect opportunity to do so. I think the question is, and I think everyone's just assuming, I've been hearing tons of talk, people just assuming that Bryan's going to win the U.S. title. That, I think, is the bigger question. I think this is a sort of inevitability given the storyline and what they need to do with Daniel Bryan. It's just, whether or not he's going to win, I think, is the real big thing.
Well, let me put this to Spuggin and the Mace. Forget if Alex Riley wins NXT Season 2 or not. Could you, as a creative, have Miz go, know what, I've said it before, Michael Cole preaches it every time, you're not ready. I think at Night of Champions, you should have to get through my guy Alex Riley, make it the one non-title match of the show, and then if you get past him, fine, if Hell in a Cell bragging rights, I'll think about giving you a shot. Or are you fine with the title match happening at Night of Champions?
I think it should happen at Night of Champions. I don't see what the reason is to postpone it, first and foremost. I think Bryan Danielson has proven that he is ready. He's more than ready. And that he, it's essentially his time to shine with that U.S. title. So, we all know Miz is going on to bigger and better things, and this is just the step for Daniel Bryan to climb up that ladder and eventually get to a heavyweight title.
Okay, Mace, you're booking this event at Night of Champions. Would you like to see Daniel Bryan versus The Miz, Daniel Bryan versus Alex Riley, or Daniel Bryan versus Michael Cole?
Ooh, can I book Daniel Bryan against The Miz for the U.S. title first, have him win that, then have Cole crack it, and then just get put in the cattle mutilation on top of the announcer's table?
And then have Cabal running
out of nowhere and Cole's head in the third row.
Oh, that would be nice, too. He hasn't unveiled the cattle mutilation yet on TV, I don't believe. I think he's been using that for... Oh, he has done it on NXT?
Yes.
Okay, it was probably one of those, I watched it and don't remember it. Because he's been doing the crossface, which I'm kind of surprised WWE would let him do that, being that it's a Chris Benoit step standard move. And we all know that Chris Benoit doesn't exist in the history of the company. In closing, with this event, we know their opinion on it. Spug and Mace have given it before, but since we have you on the record here, and you may have outlined this on previous blogs, which you can find at ExtremeNetworkOnline.com, Doc Pepper's opinion on the anonymous GM and who would you like it eventually to be, or are you 100% fine with him or her being anonymous?
I will say that the anonymous GM is one of the most frustrating, annoying. I hate that storyline. I truly loathe this storyline. It's nearly as bad. I hate it just about as much as WCW era Powers That Be. I hate it that much. I swear. I want it to be revealed. It should have been revealed a while ago. But who it is? You know, this may be weird considering that fans of my show know that I absolutely loathe Michael Cole. But if it were Michael Cole, I would absolutely be ecstatic. Evil heel Michael Cole is my favorite version of Michael Cole, and I want to see way more of him.
That's an interesting setup there. All right, at this time, we're going to go ahead and let our visitor go. Go ahead and give him other stuff that you can find on that website that we just mentioned.
Extreme Network Online, Xtreme. We've got a lot of stuff, wrestling reviews, movie reviews, anime reviews, tokusatsu reviews, anything and everything. It's probably best to check it out to find out everything that we've got. That's extremenetworkonline.com, Xtreme.
All right, he is Doc Pepper of that wonderful site. His show on that network is called No Holds Barred. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate your time.
I love being on. Thank you.
All right, and we'll keep in touch through emails and whatnot.
Oh, certainly.
I do apologize for. Oh, really? That's something new. Sir Rockin is dropping a bomb here. That do we have a breaking news backdrop somewhere that we can run this at all? We don't have any breaking news music. It was taken from us by the governor and the folks at NBC, wasn't it? It's not breaking. It's a normal plug. Okay. This past Sunday was Wrestle Talk Radio, and we'll actually start with them and work our way through the rest of the network. I was not on the show this past Sunday. I ended up spending it with my kids. And did we get to the finals of the Great Debate, guys? Do we know if we're at the finals yet of the WCW Greatest WCW Champion of All Time?
Yeah,
well,
we need
one of you there.
Ric Flair going up against Sting of all people.
Yes, the Immortal Bald Spot has been eliminated. I'm so excited.
Yes, Sting did defeat the Immortal Bald Spot in the
Brilliant.
Semifinals. So.
It's
Ric Flair versus Sting.
Awesome. Are we going to have another round table anytime in the near future on that show? Do you have anything working yet, Spug?
We always have something working. I'd come up with something so we can do it. We'll have something interesting.
We'll figure it out. And as always, Wednesday nights, 9 o'clock on this very network. Spug, Mace, the Omega, if he's not at a con somewhere. Did he go to the Chicago one that was going on this weekend? Do we know if he went?
No, he just goes to MetroCon every year.
Oh, okay, because you guys had Charlie Haas Sunday, and I figured, oh, maybe he ran into Jackie at the convention. That's why Charlie couldn't do the show for longer.
Yeah, Omega doesn't travel with the con circuit. He just he goes to MetroCon, and that's pretty much it.
Anything particular you guys have on there besides Colt Cabana bashing?
Lots of Colt Cabana bashing. we think everybody should bash Colt Cabana at least once a day. You can go to www.blogspot.shamelessshilling.me. If you want to learn more on how to bash Colt Cabana.
And I had no idea they did this Wednesday night, and all of a sudden when we did the interview with RJ Brewer, Rock's like, you need to listen to a talky talk because you just lost probably every ROH contact you have. I'm like, really? Interesting. So anything particular you guys are going to be pontificating about? The possible fall movie schedule? Anything like that?
I've got
Fall
little
TV.
Bits and pieces of news. I don't really want to go into specifics, as I'm not sure. We don't really work out what news is going to be talked about until we need it.
You're saving it for your podcast, which is on Thursday, right? That's what I thought. You guys are horrible. You don't even plug stuff.
Hey, the only way you're going to find out what we're going to talk about is to tune into the show.
Damn right, 9 o'clock.
And I'm making a vow that this week on OTL, I will not get high.
That's always good to hear. You heard it first there. Woody Harrelson will possibly be calling in to change your aspect on that one. Thursday night, he won't be calling in?
No. I'm not getting high on OTL. I am going to get high on OWW, though.
Oh, dear God. Just what we need. We need the Cannabis Association coming after me. Thursday night is kind of up in the air. There may be DJ Stein. There may be DJ Sir Rockin'. There may be DJ Goofy White Kid. That's a Florida. That's actually a Florida-based DJ. Works on 93.3 FLZ. We may see DJ Mace. We may see DJ Spug. Friday night, we definitely will see DJ Stein, and we'll also see, the return of Anything Goes with the very lovely and talented Miss Cindy Sin. She is back from her world tour and visit to the emergency room for her tonsillitis, and we are very excited to hear that she is back. So it looks like that'll be going on at some point after, 11:30-ish, Sorokin has said. Saturday night, CB Radio will be the William McConnell birthday celebration year two. And even if he's not there, they're gonna be celebrating. Okay. That's fair enough. And, this coming Tuesday is up in the air guest-wise as well. As said earlier, the next day will be my 36th birthday, so we'll try to get a couple things going there. Thanks very much to Lucha Libre USA for allowing us the time with RJ Brewer. Thanks to his mom for letting us get some of those interesting questions in. Jersey was going, this stuff wasn't screened by his mom. I said, yes, it was. The office screened some of these. They let us have some fun with RJ. Thank you to Doc Pepper from his No Holds Barred event for coming in. Spug and Mace, as always, for making sure that I look really damn good, because I know I don't look damn good doing this show. Sir Rockin is our tech producer. The big boss is Jason Deadrich and Brad Dykens. If you're a Twitter person, OWWCOM is the official Twitter of Online World of Wrestling. OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com is the number one source for all your wrestling needs. Also, WildTalkRadio.com is a great source for your needs to, if you want to listen to an archive of this show, Talker Talk, any of the other shows. They are on there as well. I promise you, I'm going to get this in under 3 hours. One of these days. My mom's favorite artist is going to take us out here on All-American Night. He did the theme show to one of the most amazing events in music history. It was known as American Bandstand. Barry Manilow will take us home here on Online World of Wrestling Radio.
Make them a mark. See, this joint is jumping. They made such a fuss, just these the ride. Hey, is this a big park? What a place you've got here, Swill.